frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
There it is.
He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
The world said that they needed clean, renewable, alternative energy. They said they needed green energy. They needed to get off the so-called fossil fuel. Well, it might surprise you if I would tell you that there is no such thing as fossil fuel, and it never has been. But besides all that, that's why they call it mad science, because I agree to disagree with mainstream science and the craziness. So what if I told you there's this thing out there called green gold, all right? Well, green gold, that sounds pretty exciting. A lot of people are interested in gold. You know, like they go out gold prospecting and all that, the silver prospecting, treasure hunting, out looking for jewels and all that kind of stuff. Well, I noticed something some time back. And, by the way, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, there's many places where you can jump in there, one of which is People for People Radio Network. If you go to the shazizradio.com chat room, to the superchat.html, there's four separate chat rooms in there, plus you can scroll down and click on the banner ad for People for People Radio Network. Really nice folks out there. Go say hi to all of them. By the way, if you're over there to People for People, if I'm coming through clearly, throw me in a couple smiley faces so I know my sound's all right. Anyway, green gold. Why is it being ignored by the world? That's a good question. You know, it just drives me insane because we got all these wars and stuff going on around the world, most of which are because of resource or gold, the gold. Some people want you to pay in a certain type of money, and other people want to be paid in gold. Well, they can't have that because you can't have one country being stronger than the other, right? Yeah. Anyway, so in the area that I live in, a lot of farmers out there. And farmers are good-hearted souls. They mean well. They're out there growing crops and just trying to earn a living and that kind of stuff. But in the process of their process to farm, and even cattle for that matter, they have a byproduct that just is really obnoxious. When you put a lot of fertilizer and nitrogens and, you know, like anhydrous ammonia and stuff like that down onto the ground to fertilize it so that you have a real good healthy crop, the byproduct is when it rains, that runoff then in turn goes down into the waterways. But when it gets down into those waterways, it makes that water so incredibly highly nutrient rich that a plant called duckweed and even another plant called watermill, if they're in that pond, will grow ridiculously fast. A couple weeks, you got a completely full pond of duckweed and watermill. And preferably just the duckweed, because the watermill still is still, you know, valuable, but it's more obnoxious. It's like a really tiny little grains. It's really obnoxious, but nonetheless, with this duckweed, it's nature's filtration system. Nature nature has everything covered. When the water gets all corroded or out of balance, this duckweed will actually cover that pond. And there's a whole lot of benefits of that duckweed that nature has provided. But it gets to the point where your pond is completely covered up. And if you're into the aesthetically pleasing look of your pond being clear, it's frustrating. So you'll have people that own golf courses and stuff like that who have ponds which don't realize that they're actually producing their own problem, because when they fertilize their grass, you know, and put this stuff out there to make their grass grow real green and lush and all that, then that also runs off into those ponds and basically causes the duckweed to grow wild. Crazy wild. But it's not just that. It's also potentials of different types of algaes as well. You'll get ponds that are covered up with massive amounts of algaes, but no duckweed, because there's no plant in there that the algae has to compete with. So the pond is incredibly off of balance. If you see tons and tons of mounds of algae in there, then it's because there's not enough of the native plants in that pond in order to remedy the situation. You know, everybody's got to compete there. And then that, and the fact that once the pond gets to a certain extent, blocks out the sunlight, which starts to break down the ecosystem underneath the pond. And now the only thing you could really grow in there would be duckweed or algae or something like that. And so, in order to resolve that, there are native fish in every area that eat duckweed. Even ducks eat duckweed. It's crazy. When they call it duckweed, you'd think it's just about ducks, but it's not. It's not. Anyway, what's the big deal, you might ask? Well, I'm going to play a couple little podcasts here and there and let you hear what other people say about it. But there's an issue out there with, the environment. Everybody wants to try to say they care about the environment. They want to reduce our dependency on what they call fossil fuel. I hate even saying that word because there ain't no such thing as fossil fuel. Until this earth stops doing what it's been doing since the dawn of time, then there will always be crude oil. You'll never get away from that fact because we live in a carbon-based world. But nonetheless, you're looking at a plant that will replicate itself as little as doubling in size every 16 hours depending on the nutrient level in any given water body. It has benefits as far as slowing down the evaporation. It has benefits for you can turn it into biofuels. You can turn it into fish food, chicken feed. Rabbits like it. You know, it's like water lettuce for the rabbits. And so, you know, you can feed your stock with it. And under the right circumstances, you could actually feed yourself with it. It's got 40% or more protein and nutrients and all that kind of stuff in there. So it's really kind of real healthy depending on the amount you intake and all that kind of stuff and how it's cooked and other factors that play in there because it's also got other vitamins that you might not want too much of. But as a supplement, in a worst case scenario, this stuff would actually keep you alive. The biggest thing is, since it's water's nature's natural water filtration system, that it will clean water up. And so, if you think about this on how, let's say right where I'm at, I've got these three ponds. One of which is the first pond that comes off of the farmer's field, the nutrient water runoff. Basically, it comes down the side there and then goes into that pond and makes that pond really highly nutrient rich. Which to me at first was obnoxious because I like my ponds to be beautiful. I put goldfish in there. And goldfish are good for putting in ponds that you want to get rid of duckweed. If you want to get rid of duckweed, then put goldfish in there. They eat it. Perch will eat it. Bluegill and, you know, small fish like that. And so, I've got to throw a smiley face in over there. Thank you very much. Woohoo! Alright, so anyway. So the water comes off the farmer's field after he fertilizes and getting his crops ready for the season and that kind of stuff. And throws my pond out of balance. Well, between that pond and another pond, I have a potty pond, which is basically a three-stage septic tank system that has two tanks, and one for the solid waste and one for the water waste, and then when it goes from there, it goes down into that pond. And then by the time it gets to that point, it's supposed to be classified by the EPA as good, good water. But nonetheless, if something's not in balance in that system, you'll have tons and tons of algae in there, which it does at this point. Well, I introduced duckweed in there to compete with the algae to take out the nutrients to clear that water up because there are they call them crawdads, crawfish, or whatever you want. These doggone little turkeys, while they're good eating in some points, but they tend to dig themselves to fresh water. And in the process, they make these nifty little tunnels from pond to pond. Well, that causes a problem because now that highly nutrient-rich pond water can seep into the next pond over, causing an algae outbreak on that side. So by introducing the duckweed into that water, it can absorb up the majority of that nutrients, and then allow whatever water does escape down underneath the ground into the next pond over to not be so highly nutrient rich. There's other factors that play, as far as how a pond can actually get off of balance, but I want to start playing a couple of these little podcasts here and let's see how this goes over. so I can point out...
Since we can't regenerate fossil fuels, we must find renewable and sustainable alternatives like biofuels, fuel made from living organisms. And the best source of biofuels...
Okay, I don't know if you've caught that right there. She said, since we cannot regenerate fossil fuels. It's a misnomer. It's a lie. It's not an intentional lie for her, I'm sure. But the system knows for a fact that it's a lie. We generate fossil fuels, what they call fossil fuels, all the time. Let me start this over again.
Since we can't regenerate fossil fuels, we must find renewable and sustainable alternatives like biofuels, fuel made from living organisms. And the best source of biofuels is likely floating right in this pond.
Plants produce starch, which can be used to make biofuels. Here's how the process works. Starch is a long chain of glucose sugars. Enzymes break down the chain and yeast ferment the sugars into ethanol. The ethanol is then blended with petroleum to be put into your car. In the U.S., corn is a major source of starch for biofuels, but it has many drawbacks. For instance, we use corn for human animal feed. So growing corn creates a dilemma. Should we use corn for food or for fuel? In addition, corn requires a lot of fertilizer and irrigation, which is costly, both economically and environmentally. Because of these problems, we want to find an alternative source of starch that is renewable and sustainable. Here in the Land Lab, we believe that duckweed is the answer.
Duckweed is the smallest known flowering plant. It's a common aquatic plant that floats on top of the water surface, kind of like a small lily pad. You've probably seen duckweed form these large green carpets that just take over your local pond or lake in the hot summertime.
Different strains of the same species often look alike. Take, for instance, these two strains. But how would you tell them apart just by looking at them? Well, it's really difficult. That's why we compare differences in their DNA. We use techniques called PCR and electrophoresis to distinguish the two strains. Let's go check out my results.
To visualize DNA, we use a stain that glows under ultraviolet light.
Hit the lights!
These pink bands are DNA molecules. Each one represents a short segment of the plant's DNA. The position of the band in each lane indicates the size of the segment. As you can see, these two strains have different sizes.
With a reliable way to identify each strain, we can screen our duckweed collection in the lab to find an optimal strain for biofuel production. One that has a high starch content and a fast growth rate, the next step is to create a demonstration pipeline for duckweed. We want to show from start to finish how you grow duckweed and convert it into biofuels in a sustainable manner. To do this, we grow duckweed on a pond that receives fertilizer runoff from a nearby plant nursery. The duckweed in the pond absorb the excess nutrients and use them to grow. We harvest the duckweed using a motorized pond skimmer. After drying the duckweed, starch is extracted and converted into ethanol using existing methods. Ultimately, we hope to bring this renewable and sustainable technology to other sites like farms and wastewater facilities.
Alright, so one of the things that wasn't mentioned in there, but she sort of alluded to, but they got a pond that is catching the runoff from a nursery where they're growing trees or plants for sale or whatever. And so all their fertilizer washes off into that pond and makes it really highly nutrient rich. One of the things that weren't said in this particular video was the fact that duckweed is a perfect fertilizer. So you can compost it, you can grind it up, make it into dust, you can make it into fish food, their biodiesels or whatever, even ethanol. But if you were a farmer and you wanted to save a lot of money on fertilizer, then you could basically recycle your fertilizer every year, because whatever fertilizer you put down, that excess nutrients is going to wash off into a retaining pond that you would have and cause that duckweed to grow rapidly. So when that duckweed grows rapidly, you can harvest it, you know, about if it's, let's say, anywhere from 16 to 24 to 48 hours, it'll completely cover that pond. You take off half of it every so often, and you start saving it and composting it and doing whatever you're going to do to it, whether you're going to be using it for chicken feed or whatever. So the next time you go around to fertilizing, instead of having to go out and haul in manure or something like that, you could just use this new fertilizer to refertilize your land right there. Mix it in with the soil and so on. So it has a potential in just that alone, not to mention the fact that if you're a farmer and you're using diesel fuel or even petrol products, gasoline, whatever, and you could supplement part of your fuel cost with either biodiesels or, you know, ethanol, then basically you save money on fuel. So the question to me becomes, if this is, you know, such a wonderful plant that in some instances is obnoxious, because a lot of people want their, like I said earlier, they want their pond to be aesthetically pleasing. They want it to look nice. They don't want all this green stuff over the top of it. Now, I tell you one thing's for sure. Goldfish, they love that stuff, and they will grow as big as their environment. So, you know, the pond I've got, you know, only has two large goldfish in it, the one that I'm talking about with the duckweed deal. But that's because a heron kept coming in there eating all the doggone goldfish. So nature sent a bandit in there to get rid of my goldfish, and it's frustrating. But anyway, so the farmer has a lot of benefits that they could be tapping into that would save fuel, drop the fuel cost down, plus fertilizer cost down. And in the same sense, dilute the nutrients of that water before it gets down in the two other waterways. And even if the doggone golf courses realize that they're causing portion of their own problem by over fertilizing their greenery around there, and that greenery is that nutrients is washing down into the there's a deal out there called hydroponics and aquaponics, where in you got like a self-contained system. You could feed the fish duckweed. When they do their business in the water, the duckweed will actually absorb that extra nutrients and filter that water out. And in the process, you're actually using that water being recirculated to grow other types of plants. There's a fish out there called tilapia that grows really good. They get big. And so if you're into like trying to grow fish and vegetables all at the same time, then that would be a good fish to look into. And so, you know, with that said, these let's go back to the golf courses for a second. Golf courses, they want their golf cart course to look really nice. They want their lakes and little ponds and, you know, stuff to look really nice. So what they will do is they'll go out and hire people to come down there and throw herbicides down. Well, then those herbicides, you know, they have environmental issues as well. Of course, even when they do kill off the duckweed or algaes or whatever, eventually that water will turn into more nutrient-rich water because of the, you know, dead biology that just went in there. And that will go downstream to the next waterway. So I've noticed a trend over here in the United States that a lot of the ponds are getting really out of hand as far as algae blooms and duckweed and watermill. But people don't seem to have an understanding of how it is that this is occurring or why. Which makes no sense to me, because if you paid attention, you know, to mad science, you'd know it a long time ago, because I've been talking about it forever. But you could take this, what would have been a problem, turn it into a green energy solution, and even more. There's a lot of different benefits of duckweed that people are claiming that if you research into it, you might just find out there's more to it than meets the eye. So let's push this right here.
Plants, of course, are going to be a major component in the future of this planet, of humanity on the planet, in two very large areas. One, of course, is in food production. As the human population increases, food becomes more and more important. But also in biofuels, which have great potential for reducing atmospheric carbon and reducing reliance on fossil fuels. In both cases, the ability to clone plants is very important. Most of the major energy crops that are currently used, for example, sugarcane, even oil palm, and some grasses that are like miscanthus and switchgrass that are being proposed as non-food biofuel crops are all propagated as clones. And so the epigenetic changes that they undergo need to be understood. One of the big problems with biofuels that has come to light in the last few years is that, of course, if we use food crops for biofuels, this pushes up the price of food. And so there's been a great interest in the last few years to find alternatives to food crops that don't grow on arable land and instead can be used specifically for biofuels. We've become very interested in aquatic plants as a possibility here. And one of the most impressive aquatic plants from a biofuel point of view is common duckweed. The reason for this is that duckweed doubles in biomass every 48 hours, sometimes even less. And as a result, it has the highest per hectare increase in biomass of any plant. Even though it's a very small plant, they're amazing organisms. As anyone who has a pond will know, especially if that pond is, for example, on a golf course or something like that, where there's a lot of fertilizer put into the ground, the fertilizer will run off into the pond. And duckweed is actually a very efficient user of waste water, if you like. It can convert high nitrogen and high phosphorus water into much cleaner water, and at the same time massively increase in biomass. So we're interested in using or optimizing duckweed for use as a biomass biofuel based on its ability to grow on waste water and water in places which you'd never imagine crops would grow. There are various ways to do this. We're taking a lesson from another very popular biofuel, which is algae, green algae. So green algae have the ability, again, to grow in water and at very high rates, but they also have the ability to make oil directly. And this has been very exciting in the biofuels community. However, it still energetically is not efficient to make oil from algae. You put more energy in, mostly from artificial light and keeping things sterile and so on, than you get out in the form of oil. Now, duckweed is a much more robust organism. It's a real plant, and so it can grow outdoors. It doesn't have big pathogen problems, and it can grow very, very fast. So if we can persuade duckweed to make oil instead of starch, we would be a long way on the path to making a really efficient biofuel.
Okay, so basically he's talking about the different types of biofuels there, but sorry, I got distracted there for a second. Anyway, so if you wanted to keep just the water flowing in to your pond, you could put like a screen up and then just have just water flowing into your pond and keep everything else out. But however, the water itself, if it's highly nutrient rich, will still throw your pond out of balance. And so with that said, nature had provided a plant that we call duckweed that it grows rapidly. I mean, I watched within a week or so where my pond went from just a small amount of duckweed all the way up to a fully covered green mat over there. And using the wind, when it was really windy yesterday, I was able to skim off a majority of it, and it didn't take long that stuff spreads back out again. So it's a fuel source that you could never run out of if you harvested it properly and used what would have otherwise been a negative as far as the farmers throwing your pond out of balance. And so, with that said, if it was done properly, you could filter the water in stages on down to the one that you wanted to keep all beautiful. You could have, a retaining pond to hold that water, that nutrient-rich water, long enough to absorb out the nutrients out of there, and then, to have it go down into another retaining pond that would do the same thing. And by the time it got down to the pond that you wanted to keep clean, it would be, in balance again. That's why I was saying that the three ponds that I was mentioning earlier, one has covered with duckweed, one is covered with algae, and the other one's got splotches of algae in it and little bits of watermill. And so if not treated, with some sort of herbicide or natural deal, that pond down there will basically, become corrupted as well. So stage at a time, I'm taking duckweed out of one pond, putting it into the other pond in order to keep the algae down so that the algae has competition in there, and throwing multiple different native plants in there so that the nature can balance it itself out. And so if the duckweed does its job filtering out the nutrients in the water, by the time that excess runoff makes it out into the larger pond that I want to grow fish or something like that in, then it's already been treated and cleaned up, filtered out. So let's move along here.
Duckweed, yeah, I know what that is. If somebody says it, I'll know it, definitely. Of duckweed grown under a microscope over the course of a few hours. Its ability to grow exponentially fast makes it a perfect candidate for biofuel production. If, for example, we start with a single duckweed plant, it will double in size in 20 hours. By 1 week, we will have 337 of these plants. In 1 month, this number will reach 68 billion. What we have here is a plant that's going to change the way we use and conserve energy. No longer will we have to depend on food crops such as corn for ethanol production. Dr. Eric Land's lab is one of the leading research teams in the country on this subject, and they are eager to share all that they have discovered.
We hope to use it as a way to generate lots of biomass so that we can use it as a good feedstock for biofuel and renewable fuel. At the same time, remediate wastewaters that become a pressing issue in the recent years.
It's really good because you cannot put all your eggs in one basket, and we have to move somewhere else, but we don't know how long it's going to take for all the energy, like normal resource in the world to run out.
We are like the future, so we need to tap into different resources. Right now, there's not that much fossil fuels left, like oil.
Currently in the United States, we have 16,000 wastewater treatment facilities, all of which can benefit from the use of duckweed. By using duckweed in wastewater remediation, we'll be able to clean polluted water without the use of chemicals or difficult filtration systems. After the water is clean, the duckweed can be harvested for biofuel production as a renewable energy source.
Aside from deserts where there's no water or extreme cold environment like the polar regions, you'll find duckweed almost everywhere.
Oh, so that's what it is. I wonder what it tastes like.
So, what's it taste like? Probably terrible, that's what. Anyway, somebody tried to call me here a second ago, but I'm not ready for that just yet. Let's move right along here. Uh, Alright, well, they're showing the fish tank right now, and so when he starts talking, then, it's terrible for live radio. Alright, so give me a second here. He's, let me see if I
can. So, this is the purpose of the fish feeder ring. It allows me to create a hole in the middle of the duckweed in which I can feed my fish without interrupting the duckweed around it. So, I can feed the fish. The fish are produce waste, which is going to help supercharge my duckweed ultimately for these guys right here. So here we go. We're starting to fill up the ice tray. I'm using an ice tray here. Each circle is approximately 1 ounce, and that gives us 21 ounces of high quality, high protein, super green, high calcium, you know, high fiber duckweed.
And so this particular video, so I can try to speed this up a little bit, he's actually showing he's making food for his rabbits and stuff, but like I said earlier, that when those fish do their business in the water, the duckweed filters out that nutrients and makes like a super food for, you know, wildlife and so on down the line. But the amazing thing is that, you know, like I said earlier, it's nature's water's filtration system, and you'd be surprised. You take a really cruddy looking pond and you allow this stuff to do its job, and then you skim back that that duckweed off that water to look down, you can see clear to the bottom of the pond. And fish love the stuff. So let me keep on going here. I think it's getting to the good part.
Survival food right there. The rabbits are going to love it. Well, truth be told, I like it too.
Everybody, it's the Manil Prepster here.
Oh,
it's late at night. Super tired. It's been a long week.
He said he liked it too. He ate that duckweed, but you gotta recognize something about duckweed that it has to be cooked properly because it has little spiny tentacles on there, and it can cause you intestinal discomfort if you try to eat it raw. Not to mention, you don't want any parasites or anything like that. So I'm saying, before you try to eat duckweed, make sure you do some research on it about, you know, how to treat it properly. So, here we go. Let's play this some more.
But I've been putting this video off for way too long. I just need to get it out there. Super excited about this video, but, you know, work happens, life happens. So, I'm going to get it out to you guys today. So, we're talking about duckweed. Duckweed is the topic of discussion for this video. And for most people, duckweed is just this really unwanted invasive weed, aquatic weed that gets stuck in the water filters, grows out of control, and people don't like it. And then you have my perspective, which is literally the polar opposite. I can't get enough duckweed. For me, duckweed is a miracle super green. Hands down, absolutely no ifs, ands, or buts. That's just my personal take on duckweed. And so for me, duckweed is an amazing food source. Is an amazing supplement, and most importantly, I think it's the most cost-effective renewable energy known to mankind currently. And by known to mankind, I literally mean you can run a vehicle off it. You can make biofuel out of duckweed. So, like I said, I can go through this long, exhaustive list with you and just, you know, ramble off different facts about it, but I'm going to put that in the description, so you can look at the description with as many bulleted, so you can look at an exhaustive list, and then the links to the literature will also be there. But I prefer to tell you why I grow it, and I'll keep with the highlights that I think are most important, or that are most important to me. So I put it in every aquatic system that I have here on my homestead. So all my aquaponic systems have duckweed. All my aquariums have duckweed. Any place I can put duckweed and grow duckweed, I grow duckweed. So it's an amazing water filter. It's great for preventing mosquitoes because it's going to layer the top surface of the water. It's going to prevent algae growth. It's going to reduce the evaporation of your body in water, which is super important because water is precious and you want to maintain and hold as much water as you possibly can. It's free food for you. It's free food for your animals. It's great for compost. It's a great addition to compost. I'm going to say it one more time for added effect, so you hope you guys can retain it. It is an amazing addition to your compost. Duckweed, high-quality duckweed, is 45% protein. 45% protein. I'm going to say that one more time as well. 45% protein. You're not going to get that from an animal source. Even your high-concentrated protein powders are not going to be that high. And if they are that high, you're not going to get the type of quality you get from duckweed. I'm sorry. Whey has the quality of whey protein is nowhere near the quality of duckweed. Sorry, try it again. It's a great source of unsaturated fatty acids, extremely high in calcium, extremely high in fiber, and it has a lot of medicinal characteristics to it. So it's been long known that it treats any kind of inflammatory ailments, inflammation. It treats upper respiratory tract infections. It's also known to treat rheumatoid arthritis. Externally, it's been known to help with skin rashes, eczema, swelling, and also insect bites. And when people say that it's an aquatic weed or pestilence, what they're referring to is its ability to double its biomass every 16 hours. So it can double its size every 16 hours. That's a lot of duckweed. It takes care of itself. You literally put it in mediocre conditions and this stuff will just grow like crazy. The only side effects that I've seen from the literature that I've been able to research and find is if you ingest mass quantities of it, you run the risk of getting kidney stones because of how high the calcium content in it is. So, I mean, you're talking about just an amazing super green that has the ability to take water, filter it, and produce you with it, give you an amazing product. And those are the reasons why I love it, especially in the wintertime when I'm not able to with my garden.
He said that it has a high calcium content in there, so you don't want to eat too much of it. But it's with every other kind of food source out there. You use it in moderation, and with other things. So this is something that could really be beneficial. But it's like, once again, if you're going to try to use it for people's type of food, you got to do a lot of research. Make sure all the ins and outs and all that. But nonetheless, you're talking about an amazing plant. I'm calling it green gold, because if somebody really wanted to be, entrepreneur type of person, you could turn that into a business, because people will beg you to get rid of this stuff out of their pond. They try and they just can't seem to get rid of it, but they don't understand the underlying cause of why it's happening to begin with. So he's got a little bit left to say on here. I'm going to go ahead and finish playing this one out, and then I've been joined by Thomas if he wants to talk with us after this. He was also talking about years ago about using a different plant called kudzu that's kind of like an obnoxious invasive plant, but yet still has a lot of good capabilities as well. So this isn't just the only plant, but this is one that inadvertently farmers cause a problem in your pond, but you could turn that into a plus. And if the farmers wanted to do it properly, they could turn it into a major plus for farming.
Produce as much greens as I would like. This comes in and it pitches for me. It gives me a high quality supplement that I can use for myself, that I can eat myself, that I can give my animals, especially in the wintertime when you're not growing as many greens. This will do it for you. So, like I said, I can sit here and just go off all, just read an exhaustive list, but it'll be in the description below. Now you might be wondering, where do I get this stuff if I want it? Truth be told, go to any body of water, especially sitting body of water like a pond, a lake, but you'll see this in creeks, you'll see rivers. But let's say you don't have a body of water near you, go to your local pet store. Last time I went to the pet store, you go to the pet store, the stuff's going to be just crowding. It's going to be all over in the aquariums, at least in my experience, that's what I've seen.
Also, when he's talking about where you go get this stuff at, there are people that sell it on eBay, and they're making a killing off of this because people want to use it for their aquaponic systems and their fish tanks, because you don't have to buy fish food anymore. If you use it properly, you can actually take and dehydrate the duckweed and turn it into fish food flakes. And the process, you want to talk about recycling and sustainable. this is a plant that you can use for multiple different purposes, and he pointed out that there were health benefits as well, if you knew about those, that could be beneficial. But so it's to me, it's an amazing plant. When I very first saw the stuff, I was annoyed by it because I want my ponds to look nice, and I didn't realize what was going on. And after doing research, I realized that the reason why my ponds were out of balance nutrient-wise was because the farmer was using different types of fertilizers and anhydrous ammonia and stuff like that to put a lot of nitrogen and, you know, nutrients down in the soil. Well, that doesn't always get absorbed up by the plant. When it rains, then that water runs off down into my pond and throws my pond out of balance. Therefore, any duckweed or watermills or stuff like that, or if you ain't got duckweed or watermill in that pond, then algaes will take over. And so you can combat the algaes by utilizing this particular plant to help to compete with the algae for that extra nutrients and be able to, you know, clean that pond up. And then with you know, some little bit of ingenuity, you can actually start harvesting that off of there, and you don't even have to feed your fish anymore. It turns into a self-contained system like the aquaponics or hydroponic systems that you see out there, where the fish is actually producing the nutrients for the plants, and that water is being recirculated and then refiltered, and the duckweed's actually helping doing the filtration as well. And so you're recycling nutrients in the doggone thing too. And you can get that pond back into balance. Let me finish this one up. I think you've got a little bit left here.
Last time I went to a pet store and asked for their duckweed, the guy's like, "You really want it?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "How much do you want?" I'm like, "How much will you give me?" This guy's literally just going net after net, just piling it on there for me. Totally free. Didn't get charged for it. These people literally are just trying to get rid of it, because if not, you know, it becomes too much and starts clogging their system. They're going to use chemicals to destroy it. So I've never had a problem with anybody not wanting to give me all their duckweed. And so they see it as a pestilence. I see it as a miracle, miracle green. So there you have it. Like I said, don't just take my advice for it. Look at the literature. Look it up for yourself. See if this is something that you can procure and grow yourself and use it to supplement your diet, the diet of your animals. Just see if it's another tool in your toolbox, because at the end of the day, you know the name of my game. It's all about sustainability. It's all about, you know, sustainability, good health, preparedness.
All right, there you have it,
guys.
Go.
Hope you guys like the video, and always.
I actually subscribed to this guy, so I'm going to be keeping an eye out for future videos. Hey, Thomas, you around?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Cool.
Put me on the spot, man.
Well, just want to let you know I'm done
on
playing
the spot.
Podcast for a second. Anyway, so basically, when I call it green gold, I'm serious. There's a lot of water filtration systems after water treatment plants out there, but they mostly rely on different types of chemicals in order to treat that water. With this particular, substance right here, you could actually, you know, cut down on what you'd actually have to treat that water with, you know, by dragging that extra nutrients out and allowing this plant to be its natural filter like it does. You know, the less chemicals in the water, as far as I'm concerned, the better. But, you know, when it gets down to water filtration and, trying to be sustainable as far as energy-wise, if people took the knowledge of this particular plant and how fast it would actually grow and grow it intentionally in, you know, like retaining ponds after every cattle farm or,
grew.
You know, huh?
Grew it.
Yes.
All right. I know it sounds weird. It sounds like some ancient Babylonian warrior's name, but that's past tense of grow.
But they could take that what would have been normally a negative for somebody downstream and turn it into a positive, because now you balance out that water before it ever gets out of the waterway. It might still be a little more nutrient rich than it was before, but not to the extent that it is just coming straight off the farmer's field. When that water makes it down into my pond, You know, it's like right straight off the farmer's field right after fertilizing, and that water is so nutrient rich that this stuff will grow like wildfire. You can scrape off half of it one day and come back out there and a whole entire pond's covered a day or so later. And that's how fast it'll grow. It's pretty impressive stuff. So with that said, instead of trying to use like corn to make different types of basically alcohol, methanol, or ethanol, whatever it is, you could take this and there's different ways that you could refine it and actually turn it into diesel fuel for that matter. So it's got a lot of pluses. And if you understand how, you know, crude oil itself was made, and then you mimic what nature's done with that process, you could turn this stuff into different things like plastics and everything else. There's a lot of benefits, and I'm just kind of curious why it is that the world hasn't like embraced this, because when you go back to the golf course, they're going to use herbicides to get rid of the doggone algaes and duckweed and watermelon. Well, that's going to cause a problem if you decide you want to eat that fish. Now you got herbicides because the fish are floating around in that water, absorbed up in the fish. So why would you want to eat a fish that would have been in a pond that was used chemical herbicides and stuff? There are natural herbicides out there, like barley straw and something else. I can't remember what it is, but barley extract is what they actually make a concentrate of. But it takes a lot of the stuff in the water, and it takes a little bit of time. So you got to get ahead of the game if you're going to try to use those natural ones. Otherwise, it just runs rampant, and pretty soon all of that green covers up the top of that pond, which blocks out the sunlight down there. And if you don't do anything to it from that point on, the water will be clean. But it's terrible on the wildlife underneath the water, because it starts breaking down the other plants inside there because it can't get no sunlight. And so next thing you know, all you do is got a pond full of duckweed. So it's something that you'd have to kind of use a little bit of common sense. You know, there's places out there in Florida that I actually sent a letter to the governor of Florida, Rick Scott, and I was trying to explain to him how he could actually turn that algae problem into a positive. Algae can be turned into biofuels as well. But to get control of it so that the green algae isn't floating down out of... they started off in Lake Okeechobee. Actually, kind of started before that. It started off at the sugar fields and the cattle farms. Well, of course, cattle do their business on the ground. It puts a lot of nutrients into the soil. That runoff then goes down into the lake eventually. And the same thing with the sugar farms when they're fertilizing. The same exact process happens. The runoff goes down, and it throws that pond's nutrients level out of balance, which causes, if there is no duckweed in that pond, to contend with algae. The one that's there by itself, the algae, duckweed, or watermill, is going to grow rampant. Well, then, from that point, when there's a heavy rain or whatever, and all that stuff starts to wash out, the algae starts to wash out of the Lake Okeechobee and goes down into the stream. In Florida, you have sections of water that's known as like brackish water. It's where the water, the fresh water, begins to mix with salt water. It'll actually have a different color to it. But the green algae can't live in a salt water condition. And so it begins to die off at the moment it hits that brackish water, which, even though it's died off, it still becomes food for the red algae. And that red algae is the one that actually has its own natural toxin, and when it's not enough food source around, it will actually release its own toxin, which can kill off fish and knock the oxygen level out, and so then you get massive fish die-offs because you got these big giant blooms of algae. But by getting control of it from the get-go, you keep it out of the lake, and you reduce the amount of green algae that has the potential of going down into that water, And then that was would reduce the nutrient level downstream to the more of a natural level, so that it's not feeding that red algae bloom more than it normally would. And of course, if you've ever been to Florida, Florida's like mostly sand, on the ground or whatever. And so anybody's got a septic system out there, it might be several years old. Some of that's going to leach into the ground, and that's going to aggravate that same process as well. But if you use this particular plant to do what nature does best and use it as a filtration system, you could set up retaining ponds here and there that would help to take that nutrients out and reduce the possibility of massive blooms of algae or whatever, whether it be the green algae or the red algae. So there's a lot of possibilities here. And once again, I'm calling it green gold, and I'm wondering why it's being ignored by the world. When I say the world, I mean the world as a whole. There are individuals out there that realize its potential, and so they use it. But not to the extent of what they could be doing it. You could turn this into quite literally an industry, for making biofuel and, fertilizers and fish food. It's just amazing. And so, with that said, Thomas, you got any kind of input on that?
No, not really.
Oh.
Nothing that ain't been said a million times before, so.
Well, I'm just...
I don't have the energy today to keep repeating myself over things I've said before, so.
Yeah.
And I'm being a lot of what I've tried to do to infuse information into the world out there, because I'm finding that whatever I'm doing now is not getting digested.
Yeah.
Because I'm not getting any responses like I should be, so,
Yeah, that's a lot of frustration.
Look more into that. Well, I mean, I think it's some of it's probably information overload. So.
Well, that's a possibility.
Yeah, people have too much information, their brain shuts of whatever it is you were trying to say, and without missing some here when they go back and look at it like that, so they discard everything.
Yeah, well, so. That's a shame, because I don't know, I get frustrated because I hear them all the time, so talking about we got to be sustainable, we got to be getting into green, renewable, alternative energy sources, and every single one that's put on the table pretty much gets, kicked to the curb for whatever reason, whether it be they think it's too expensive, or I don't understand. Because right now, if the circumstances were correct for what I'm talking about doing, I would be able to take my neighbor farm and utilize what would have normally been an aggravation to me. When he fertilizes his land, he's making me a crop. And if enough people wanted to buy that crop, I could start harvesting it and never run out until the cold season. Then if I wanted to do like a greenhouse kind of deal, I could actually grow this stuff during the winter time as well, inside of a greenhouse, somewhere where it's warm, because normally during the winter time that duckweed will sink to the bottom. You think it's gone, but it ain't. It'll wait till weather warms up, and it'll pop right back up at the top again and start growing like clockwork. But like I said, the fish love it. You put different native fish to your area, like perch and bluegill, in there, and they'll eat it. And so, as far as I'm concerned, I can't find any negative outside of the fact that, if you want your pond to look nice and pretty, it's not going to look nice and pretty if you got tons of duckweed covering it over like a big, thick blanket. Huh. What do you think?
I think it depends on what you consider nice and pretty. Some people might like a nice uniform green blanket laying over it.
Ah. Well,
I mean, think about it. How many people get tired of nothing but the bare brown bone structure of all the trees around them, and they're actually relieved whenever the trees flush out and cover with green. And when you get back far enough from a bunch of trees, it looks like a nice, even carpet, just like, you know, freshly cut grass. Looks more like carpet than it does, you know, an empty field with various scraggly, you know, bits sticking up here and there and everywhere.
Well, it does make it look nice in the summertime, but as far as pond-wise, I want to be able to see my goldfish.
Okay, well, if you're fishing, though, you might actually get some benefit from having that there, because you'll get more fish that'll be able to hide from that summer heat, you know?
Well,
Let the duckweed convert some of that heat from the sun into food for them.
That, and like the guy was talking about earlier, the gal was talking about earlier in one of the podcasts that I played, was that it slows down water evaporation, so that would be a plus in, you know, really hot environments where you want to try to keep your water from evaporating so rapidly. But either way, if you've ever seen this stuff on the top of a pond and you skim back the water, you can see clear to the bottom. It's not like your normal pond that might get, you know, mixed up by, you know, whatever wildlife is living in it and kind of be kind of cloudy or murky. This is amazing crystal clarity. You can see clear to the bottom of this dang thing. So it's really doing a good job as far as filtration. But if you took this same concept and you wanted to clear up waterways, you know, for people that needed to, you know, like there's different places in the world where the water is so polluted that it's just insane. You can clear that water up, but that particular, if you're pulling toxins out of that doggone water, that's probably not something that you'd want to feed any wildlife with, but you could still turn it into biofuel. And so, you know, with that said, responsibility is going to be the key with everything. It's like over here, grapevines were not native to Missouri. And so people brought grapevines in, and over the years, they just let them go. And when these grapevines got out of hand, they'd send runners clear off down through the woods. And these grapevines would climb up these trees. And when they did grow grapes, it'd be little teeny tiny grapes, because they had to spread out all the nutrients throughout that entire vine structure. But the drawback was this. Number one, the grapes were tiny. And number two, they were climbing up the tree, it would eventually choke that tree out, and they'd kill your tree off. Because those vines, they wrap around the doggone tree. And if you understand how trees actually get their water up through, you know, the first few portions of the from the bark in, once that is pinched off, that tree starts to die. And it's not just grapevine, you know, poison ivy, doggone Virginia creepers, and different vines like that. When they wrap around that tree and the tree continues to grow, it basically gets a stranglehold on it, and it'll start killing your tree off. So if you don't go around and start cutting these vines back, eventually that tree is going to die. But if you can find that main root of that grapevine, and you can cut it back and keep it trimmed back and only allow it to grow so far, it'll start growing regular sized grapes again. But just like any other plant out there, if you're going to, you know, take it from one place to the next, you got to be really responsible for it. Like I said, there never were grapevines native to this area, but when they brought them in from overseas, you know, because obviously they wanted to make, you know, grapes for food and wine or whatever, but then they just let them go. And once they let them go, these grapevines, they got massive. They just basically took over all the doggone space that they could get and climbed up every doggone tree, just made a heck of a mess. So I've been for years cutting these things back. But anyway, there's other invasive species out there like that, some of which, I guess all of which, could be anything plant-wise, biological-wise, could be used as a different resource. But you first got to understand what the heck it is that, you know, that it's good for, you know, the pros and cons. And that's why I keep wanting to bring this doggone duckweed up, because if you're wanting to run generators for electricity and you can make some sort of biodiesels or ethanol type alcohol based fuels to at the very least supplement your fuel cost, you could turn what would have been a negative of the farmer inadvertently throwing your pond out of balance into a positive. And in the farming industry, if they utilize this, they could save themselves on fertilizer cost, fuel cost, and even cattle feed for that matter. Because if it's grown properly and it's not filtering out toxins, then it would be safe to feed to your cattle and even worst case scenario to people. I mean, there's one podcast that I hadn't played yet, but they actually drink some, they make a powdered mix and they take a drink of it. Let me play that real quick. I think this is the one.
Yes, the International Loan Association presents methods for duck meat.
No, that's not the one. Sorry. Ah! There, I can't remember which one it was. Let me look down there and see if I can find it. Maybe it's this one right here.
Could the next superfood be green stuff floating on top of a pond? Some seem to think so. It's called duckweed or water lentils, and while it doesn't look very appetizing, it's supposed to be packed with protein. So what is the real deal on this? It's sold on the market as lentine powder. It's like a type of protein powder. We have some here to taste. This powder is actually the profile that I really like. For 100 calories, you got 9 grams of fiber, 12 grams of protein.
No sugar.
I mean, have you ever done duckweed before, any of you?
No, this is the first experience.
Thank you.
Duckweed shots, bro.
This is 100 calories, though, just the first?
No. So that's in 100 calories worth. You're looking at 9 grams of fiber, 12 grams of protein, and some really good nutrients. So bottoms up, docs?
Bottoms up.
It's a little bit like green tea.
It's seaweed,
very much
even
like
a
green
little
tea.
Bit. Yeah. I was going to say Metamucil. No.
Well, that's a good thing too.
It tastes like it came from a pond.
Yeah. No, it tastes sort of like seaweed, like
you swallowed a little bit of lake water.
And it's not that strong a flavor actually, and a nice alternative for proteins. I mean, I know you know this so well about people with milk allergies, soy allergies. This might be an alternative in terms of giving them protein.
I like the idea behind it. And I will say, everyone's always looking, and I talk a lot about how plant proteins are great. Why? Because you're also getting that fiber. Now, you guys remember Popeye?
The Sailor Man?
Okay, so watch my arm. It didn't pop through. What's wrong? So, hey, it's another option when it comes to protein powder. Stick around, everyone.
So, like, the look on your face was priceless when they tasted it. Probably ain't, like, the best choice as far as if you like the taste of your food, I'm sure. But it's knowledge out there that could be beneficial for you if you take and do a little bit of research about it. Anyway, so the oil industry continues to do what the oil industry does, and so I'm thinking that's probably, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, people just basically ignore something that could actually be a benefit. There are companies out there that are getting into using algaes to make biodiesels and stuff like that, biofuels, but this is something that if you're talking about becoming energy independent, there's many different ways in order to utilize this particular plant. And so, you know, if you got a lot of ponds and a lot of lakes out there that are out of balance, you could not only help to clean those ponds up and the lakes and get that water back into balance by understanding what nature's been doing, you know, mechanically and chemically and, you know, biologically or whatever, And you can help it out, help along. And in the process, you know, right now it'd probably be a good time for somebody to be an entrepreneur as far as you know, using this stuff to make fertilizers or fish food that you could actually put on the market. You know, I don't know how much trouble government entities would give you for it, but if you compete with the oil industry, you might get a little bit of trouble, I'm sure. Are you still around, Thomas?
Nope.
No. Well, you got any thoughts on the matter at all?
No. Not beyond what you've been saying, so.
So, I think, basically, I've been trying to tell people for a long time that there are so many doggone solutions available. It's just I don't know how to get it out there far enough to get it into. I'm sure that these doggone people in fuel industries understand the possibilities of biofuels. But all you hear on there is about how we got to become energy independent, and in the process of becoming energy independent, they use different techniques like fracking, which is, to me, not a really good idea because it's basically cracking up the ground to release natural gases and such, same of which you could actually make from any of these plants, even grass clippings for that matter. anything, grass clippings, leaves, and it would be so ridiculously easy to start a farming industry that basically grew nothing but duckweed and turn that into biodiesels or alcohol based fuel supplements that would cut down what you actually had to have. You could actually turn it into methane as well. Anytime anything rots, it's going to release gases like that. So between the fertilizer capability and food potential, you heard these folks and they drank it. Of course, the look on their face was priceless because it probably tasted terrible, but I'm sure that they're, with a little bit of creativity, you could probably make it taste nice. I don't know. But either way, getting this information out to the world and getting them to run with that idea, that's the hard part. So anyway, basically, here on the Mad Science Show, we talk about a lot of stuff. Says search for free energy, and if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, because everything around you is either a fuel source or a source of energy. And if you understand how it actually works mechanically and you can tap into that in a decent manner with nature, you're not producing waste and whatever waste that you may have, byproducts or whatever. If you understand the chemistry of that and how nature recycles everything, there is no waste. Nature don't waste anything. It recycles everything. And there are some things that we put together that might last a little bit longer than other things, but they're still, nature can break them all down. There ain't nothing that's on this planet that nature can't break down. And so with that said, taking that into consideration and mimicking what nature has done already, I say we got every answer we need. And I guess the word just got to get in the right ear of the right people with the right power or finances in order to build the right machines or infrastructure to make something happen. And I'm always trying to say that those people, the best people to do that is we the people, and coming together and building things like gasifier equipment to run generators, or basically making refineries that would take this duckweed and turn it into types of fuels or other products. Because of the protein level in the duckweed, if you're going to turn it into sort of like a petroleum-based product, then you can actually make plastic out of it. You know, that's what plastic comes from. And to the extent of making, you know, biodegradable plastics or whatever, something that's going to be more natural than the way that it's been done, even the plastic that already exists is a valuable resource as far as I'm concerned. Doesn't matter whether, you know, it's in the dump or out floating out in the ocean. Other than the pollution factor, you know, getting it out of the ocean, you know, a lot of people will start to say, you know, well, it's just too doggone expensive, you know. It's a resource. I mean, if you look at what nature's already provided, it's a resource. There's nothing out there that can't be recycled. Absolutely nothing at all. And it just blows my doors off how we're not farther along than what we are right now, and how, you know, the technology that we do have access to. We got amazing computers. We got amazing cell phones. Heck, the modern day computers have a little bitty chip, and that's the hard drive for the computer. It's amazing. 128 gig hard drive fit in the palm of your hand. Right down there in the center, little palm of your hand, and it's able to have more processing than some of the big bulky old hard drives of just a few years ago. It's amazing. But with that type of technology and the access to the information that we've got right now, it makes no sense that we ain't farther along and that we still have you know, environmental concerns that don't seem to be able to get resolved. The answers are all there. The solutions are all there. It's just the fact that the motivation factor ain't there. Now, if you got trillions of dollars, you can motivate trillions of people to do a lot of stuff. Seems like that's the only motivation factor left anymore. If you got the funding for the research, you can get it done. Why aren't these other big companies and corporations out there getting it done? Well, they probably already have. They probably already have patents on most of which we've already been talking about for just such an emergency that the winds of change actually go in the opposite direction and people start to build these things and say, hold on a second, we own that patent there. What? Why haven't you been using it all along? You know, the petrol dollar is protected, you know, basically as a, they say national security. So if you interrupt the petrol dollar, then you have to deal with the man. And a lot of people don't fare very well when that happens. You know, just the folks out there that decided they didn't want the petrol dollar. They didn't want paid in paper. They wanted paid in gold. Suddenly they become enemies of the state. All along, there's green gold laying right underneath your feet. It's something that would have, you know, so many benefits that you could turn around and use to save money. You wouldn't have to buy as near as much fuel. Wouldn't have to buy near as much fertilizer. As a matter of fact, you could actually recycle last year's fertilizer and using your farm ponds, retaining ponds, to actually grow more fertilizer. Every time something biodegrades, it turns itself into fertilizer. That's how soil's made. That's how dirt. A lot of folks don't even realize what dirt actually is. It's the leaves and the sticks and, you know, the bugs and everything from nature that lands on the ground, begins to biodegrade, and turns into fresh soil. And if it's really highly nutrient rich, and that water runs off of that soil down into a body of water that's already nutrient rich, and now it just increases that nutrients, and suddenly you got tons and tons of duckweed. Green gold. Why is it being ignored? That's what I want to know. So, anyway, I'm gonna play that one podcast down there so I can catch my breath for a second. I started playing it earlier. Let me see if I can find her. There it is.
Yes, the International Loan Association presents methods for duckweed bioprospecting. If you can see your screen, you'll see a handful of duckweed there that happens to be Lemna turrianifera, which I harvest routinely from one of my wild ponds that I have found in my region. I didn't know this pond existed 3 months ago until a friend pointed it out on the internet for me. Today I'm going to teach you how you can find ponds just like this, loaded with duckweed, in your vicinity. Because as you know, duckweed grows around the world, except for in the very coldest places on the planet. Alright, so what's so special about duckweed? Well, as you know, you've heard and read and probably experienced for yourself the high protein levels that are found in duckweed when grown in a high nutrient solution, such as a swine lagoon or wastewater from a municipal setting. Protein levels vary depending on the nitrogen loads, anywhere from 12% protein all the way up to 43% protein. And considering that duckweed is such a prolific grower, it'll double its biomass here in the U.S. It's been reported recently as fast as doubling every 16 hours. Now, I have not experienced that myself. The literature usually talks about 24 to 36 hours, and I've experienced a 24-hour turnaround quite a number of times. It thrives on waste nutrients. From, like I said, animal husbandry wastewater settings to municipal settings to just out in nature. Mother Nature knows how to grow it very, very well, just using organics from tree leaves that have fallen into the water and biodegraded. The nutrients that are duckweeds do not require a lot of nutrients, but they do, as all plants, require micronutrients as well as macros, PKNN, and just a host of things. They're not that picky to grow, but they are an amazing plant for cleaning up wastewater systems. Also, that they've found is that duckweed can reduce water evaporation on a pond surface by as much as 30%, which is fascinating when it comes to are slowly depreciating water volumes for example, in the U.S., in California, where they have open pond reservoirs, but the water evaporates, and they can't cover it up with anything because the ponds are so large. Enter duckweed. It'll clean and remediate the water, keep it cleaner than it was before, reduce evaporation by as much as 30%. There's a lot of research going on for using duckweed because of its prolific biomass for bioenergy. I know researchers that are using it to grow or to produce bioethanol, biomethane naturally, biobutanol, and several other energy. They're even burning it outright. In one particular situation, there is a inventor that I am in contact with who can turn duckweed into a dry powder jet fuel to fly in the aviation markets. Also, the human food potential is there. For the most part, researchers are focusing on animal feeds, but there is a small but growing number of researchers looking at it for its high-quality amino acid profile as a human food supplement. So over the next few years, you're going to be hearing more and more about this, and if you are anything like me, you're going to try to steer things in this direction. And last but not least, today I want to say that duckweed is used now in bioplastics in the United States. Because of its high protein content, it forms great complex systems within the filler for bioplastics. So it's a cheap way to go, and I would prefer to go with a higher value product to begin with, and that's why I go with what I'm what my focus is. But there are people who are doing it. If you've got plenty of duckweed, you can do anything you want with it. Okay. The existing options for obtaining duckweed specimens. You can go to eBay. For $6 or $8, you can get a handful of duckweed. It's no guarantees as to what species you're going to end up with.
All right. Did you hear that? $6 or $8, you can buy a little Ziploc baggie full of duckweed to put in your pond or your fish tank. Is that mind-blowing? So, if I want to start selling it on eBay, all I got to do is get me a whole bunch of doggone Ziploc baggies, and I got tons and tons and tons of duckweed that I could sell. So, just in that market alone, heck, I could make out like a bandit every year selling duckweed. So that's why I don't understand why it is that more people aren't looking into it, because, like I said earlier, motivation is money related these days. You can't get anyone to do anything unless you're willing to offer them a lot of money. People just don't want to try to do nothing. And that's why we're in the situation that we're in. That's why the average Joe is still, you know, working 9 to 5. Because if they really took these solutions seriously, they could reduce their doggone fuel cost, energy cost, and actually, you know, benefit financially to be able to reinvest funds into other things. You know, so what normally would have been a pain in the neck, because I like my ponds to be clear, now I found have a whole lot of benefits. Not to mention, like I think Thomas mentioned earlier, about how it gives your fish cover from, you know, the sun or whatever, or even predatory birds that might be trying to get them. They could swim underneath that and at least have a chance to hide. But the fact that it could be actually sold on the market as well. So if a person really seriously wanted to turn this into a business, wouldn't be that hard to do. Dry fish food flakes, you can get solar dehydrators and dehydrate it and dry it out and make fish food flakes that are high in protein, that, you know, people who's in the fishing business, whether, you know, for just their home entertainment to have their own fish tank or to actually big giant production centers, you wouldn't even have to pay for fish food anymore if you understood what was going on here. Anyway, let's move a little bit along on there. But she just mentioned there's a financial aspect to it, that people are selling this stuff, and in most neighborhoods that don't realize what's going on, they give the stuff to you. They'll gladly tell you, come down and take it all off of my pond. It's incredible. It's a resource that just doesn't go away, and if utilized properly, you could compete with the oil industry flat out.
Because people are not well educated as far as the taxonomy part, but duckweed is available on eBay. The ILA, the International Alumni Association, has several members, including myself, who are willing to send ship samples within the United States. I cannot ship to Texas or California, but other than that, I am free to ship it wherever I want. It's considered an invasive noxious pest in Texas and California. Florida, I can get away with shipping it there, but
That's kind of funny. Texas finds it to be obnoxious, and Texas is one of the big oil producers out there. You know, there's a lot of oil fields out in Texas. And if they heard this show or knew prior that this could actually be a competition to them, that yeah, they obviously wouldn't want it in Texas because, you know, hey, you can't have anybody competing with the oil industry, right?
They're a little more lenient on that. You can also get it from Rutgers, but you're going to get any species you want from the planet, grown anywhere and adapted to any situation, just about. It's a little pricey. It's $50 to $70 for a sample, and you're going to get about 10 fronds, maybe 20, in a small little petri dish.
Did you hear that? $50 to $70 just for a little bit, tiny bit of it in a little petri dish. That's the doggone money. That's probably a strain that is like really, you know, clean. There's nothing else. It's being grown under a really tight circumstances so that it's, you know, like really pure plant. Ain't no little shrimp or anything growing around it or anything you might find in a pond or anything like that. So that's probably why the expense is so much. But if you're thinking, if you understand what you just heard, they turn that into a really valuable resource. $50, $50 to $60 just for one little petri dish with these things in it. Think about that. It's an economy in itself. And you turn around, a lot of people, like I said, they go, the doggone people at the golf courses and other places like that will pay people to put herbicides, chemical herbicides, you know, like, I can't remember what that doggone, copper sulfate or something like that. You know chemistry, Thomas. Is it copper sulfate that they use to get algae?
I'm not sure. I know they use copper sulfate for killing off the roots of like trees and stuff like that that are getting into places you don't want them by putting it into those places. So,
what would be the negativity of the copper sulfate as far as using it for a herbicide?
Just mostly the concentration. Otherwise, if it's diluted enough, it just gets used as a copper mineral supplement and a sulfur mineral supplement.
So you obviously wouldn't want to throw tons of this in your pond and then want to eat your fish afterwards, so...
Probably not. Yeah. Actually, they warn you about letting that kind of stuff wash off into watersheds and whatnot.
Yeah.
So it's not as dangerous as something like, say, seven dust, because that stuff takes forever to break down, and it's actually a toxic carbon compound. So it's not something that can be diluted down like the copper sulfate, which is just basically copper, sulfur, oxygen, and hydrogen. So
yeah. So when the golf courses are using different pesticides and herbicides in order to make the, you know, keep the bugs down on the property and keep the water looking pristine, you know, that runoff right down to the next pond over could be pretty doggone disgusting as far as I'm concerned. It could be a mess.
Right.
So, if they were smart in the deal, they could turn this stuff into fertilizer and do it all naturally, and then at some point, maybe even be able to, you know, either fuel their golf carts with it, you know, if they're not running all electric, or even fuel the generators that are charging at the golf carts or whatever, you know, or, you know, using a little bit of duckweed left on the pond to feed the fish that they might want to keep in the pond, you know, making it more naturally balanced. And if they introduced more natural plants, native plants to the pond, they would compete with each other and keep a, you know, good happy balance of it and still make the pond look good, you know, like some really nice water lilies or something like that, you know. So let's see what else this lady's got to say here.
So if you're looking for larger quantities on a consistent basis, and the reason we're here today is because you need to go source it yourself from your own region. Why? Because the strains locally that you have are adapted to your local ecosystems, your local weather, your local rise and fall of nutrient loads during the year. That you can get lots and lots of duckweed locally, and I'm talking in terms of thousands of pounds. Some people are, when they find out you're looking for duckweed, they beg you to come and take it away from their ponds because they appreciate a clear surfaced pond. Well, as for me, if I see a duckweed loaded or a pond loaded with duckweed, to me, that's a beautiful pond.
Huh.
Also, you want your duckweed to be easily accepted.
I think you said something like that earlier about, she just said to her, if she sees a pond that's covered with duckweed, she finds that beautiful looking. That's crazy.
Right.
I guess to each his own.
Possible on a routine basis. Let's say you got over exuberant with fertilizer and you
green,
killed off a batch of duckweed.
Shades of green because it's, you know, indicative of living and healthy.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, a blue sky has more of a healthy feel to it than one that's all gray and got brown in it and stuff like that. Because, you know, people are pretty sure that that's an indicator that there's a bunch of toxins in the air. Maybe smoke or something.
Well,
poison. You know, it feels poisonous for the sky to be brown and the ground to be blue. That's backwards. It's not supposed to be like that, you know.
Yeah. The duckweed.
So it has a very specific effect on people's mindset.
Yeah, the duckweed not only filters out, but it actually helps to oxygenate the water as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only time that really, you know, it's just like anything else, you know, too much excess when it's completely covering up the pond and blocking out all the sunlight, well, that starts to cause the problems underneath it to where that pond, you know, can't grow other types of native plants and stuff. And after a while, you know, the only thing you'll have on the pond is duckweed. But I've been working with this stuff for quite a while, and those goldfish, they love it, and they get pretty doggone big eating it because there's a lot of proteins in there. And you don't even have to feed them. But if you want to grow your own duckweed, it's as crazy as it sounds. You want to make that pond nutrient rich, throw fish food in there. Go get you some of that floating fish food and throw it into that pond. And you'll be fertilizing that pond. So it's all being recycled. Everything's being recycled. It's a self-contained system. And the purity of the water, when this stuff is done, it's mind-blowing. You know, so it's a plus. You know, if you got a pond that's like really seriously polluted, you start growing this stuff in there, and it'll filter that pond out. And then if you start gradually introducing, you know, things native back to it and keeping it skimmed off a little bit, allowing some duckweed to remain, you can bring a pond back to life that otherwise, you know, like some cattle ponds, they're just so nasty. The cows have been up in there and they peed and all that kind of stuff. And so the pond is really all out of balance. The alkaline level's probably skyrocketed, so a fish couldn't live in it if it wanted to. And, you know, you put that duckweed in there and allow time to start cleaning that thing up. You'll get that water clear enough to now you can introduce small fish in there that would actually eat duckweed. You know, like perch or bluegill or, you know, even carp for that matter, grass carp or goldfish. And you can start cleaning that pond up and you can bring that pond back to life. It's pretty amazing. And then you start doing a little bit of research about what types of plants are actually native to that area and start introducing those plants in there, and they will find a balance in there. They'll start to, you know, compete for the nutrients in the water, and, you know, it'll balance itself back out. So we have the knowledge and the capability how to clean our ponds and lakes back up and our waterways. In the process of when the farmer's doing what the farmer does, He can still fertilize, and when that water runs off before it actually gets to your pond, he'll have retaining ponds to hold the water for a period of time, and it'll start to filter that water out so that by the time it makes it down to your waterway, its nutrients level slightly lower than it would have been otherwise, and so it's not doubling down on the nutrients that's already in your pond and helping your pond to get in balance. So by working together with the farmers and nature, we can clean this mess up. And Florida would have a whole lot less algae blooms. There are natural red algae blooms. That's a given. You know, but those natural red algae blooms are aggravated by the green algae blooms that are aggravated by the highly nutrient-rich water running off of cattle farms and sugar farms that are in Florida on each end of the waterway out there. And so when that water, you know, which normally would have been run off into like the Everglades or something like that, the, you know, it's all contained down in there, it's breaking that system down before it ever even gets to that lake. And instead of that water being able to run off, it's diverted from each side of it out towards the ocean. And if it's got too high of an algae content, and then it makes it down into the portion where the fresh water meets the salt water, that brackish water that I mentioned earlier, green algae can't live in salt water, so they will begin to die. Even though they died off because they can't live in that, they still become a highly nutrient protein source for the red algae to thrive on. And so it's a domino effect. But if it was used properly from the get-go, start to finish, do what nature already does, it would benefit the farmer because the farmer could use it to feed his cattle. He could use it for biofuels. He could use it for fertilizer. And worst case scenario, people food, you know. You heard the one little podcast where these folks were drinking the stuff. The look on their face was priceless, like I said. It probably doesn't taste very good in its natural powdered, dried up form whenever they refine that or whatever. But nonetheless, the guy sitting there talking about, you know, how much protein and calcium and benefits that thing had in it, and the other guy on the other podcast was talking about how it even had other health benefits, like for, you know, bug bites or other things. I've never tried it, but it's still, you know, worth looking into, because if that's the case, you know, you got a natural medicine as well. Like I said, it's green gold as far as I'm concerned. Now, I'm just curious why it's being ignored. You know, as far as mainstream wise, you should hear people talking about this all the time. Every once in a while, you'll hear a blurb on mainstream media about, you know, algae and biofuel, and then they'll give you the pros and cons, or, you know, well, we don't know if we can make enough of it, or the process right now is kind of expensive, and so on down the line. It's not an expensive process to turn this into fuel. The gasification process is ridiculously simple, and if you understand how crude oil is actually made in the, you know, under the ground, the heat and pressure, and, you know, different factors that play into it, you can mimic that. You can build refining equipment to turn this stuff into basically crude oil that then in turn could be turned into different types of plastics or whatever. You know, that's what petroleum products, your rubber tires, your plastics, all kinds of stuff comes up out of there. And, you know, as far as using it for a fuel source, not just for, you know, running diesel tractors or even gasoline engines as well, you know, supplementing those fuel costs, this stuff can be burned. You could actually press this stuff into logs, you know, to use it as firewood. There's so many different possibilities. And yet, nobody's really taking it serious enough to make a major industry out of it. I mean, you could get the money from the doggone golf courses, because you could say, look, we'll come out there and get that stuff out of there naturally, clean this pond up, and we'll come back and take it away for you for free every time it gets out of hand. And you think they wouldn't jump on that, save some money? Until they figured out you were making money off of it, it wouldn't be an issue. But taking away one man's trash to turn it into a treasure. But this stuff is everywhere. And it's what nature uses to clean the system back up. If it's out of balance, nature has the plant life and the wildlife necessary to balance everything back out. It's amazing. So let's see what else this lady got to say.
Which is possible to do, or you starved it of too many nutrients, and it's not thriving. It's gone into remission, so to speak, for a while. You can go back to that pond, and you can collect another few gallons or thousands of pounds of it, whatever you need. You can't do that with eBay, and you can't do that with Rutgers. And it's free. What more could you want? Now, the way that I actually find local ponds is by going to the website flasherus.com. You could go to googlemaps.com as well, but I'm more familiar with Flasher, and I'll show you how to go about it, how to recognize a duckweed pond in your area from a pond loaded with algae. You want to look for, and this is why I say train your eye, for the pond coloration, whether or not that pond is wind protected, either from buildings or from trees or shrubs, because duckweed, as you know, floats on the surface, and it's not going to thrive in a pond normally if the wind is constantly pushing it to one side and it ends up on shore and it dies. You want to watch for ponds with perimeter shading, normally trees and overhanging trees and bushes. Duckweed ponds love waste nutrient runoff from chicken barns, from hog systems or cattle pastures and so on, or human waste nutrients as well, I should say. And then the site logistics. As you're looking at...
I got to pause that for a second. She just said about human waste, the potty ponds out there. You turn your doggone potty pond into a source of revenue. Literally. Not only is it filtering out the potty pond... See, the way that the EPA has it set up now, the specific types of septic systems that they got are like a three-stage septic system. They got the solid waste portion, the water waste portion, and then that goes off into a potty pond. Well, so by the time it gets from the first one to the second one and then on down into the potty pond, by the time it hits into the potty pond, it's classified as fresh water again because it's already been broke down. And then you can tell whether or not your septic system's doing its job when you look at the pond itself. If the pond itself is full of algae, then your septic system's not doing a very good job. But by introducing that duckweed in there, you can assist that potty pond in cleaning the water up yet even more so that that water doesn't make it on down to the next waterway. Because like I said earlier, crawdads or crawfish, whatever you want to call them, they will dig themselves a path underground to fresh water sources. And in the process of that, they will cause your pond to leak into another pond and start a domino effect. So that little tunnel that they just dug to the next pond over is allowing that nutrients to get to the opposite pond and then causing the algae on that pond to go. And if there is no duckweed or watermill or any native plants that can... compete with that algae, then the entire pond basically gets covered up. And that's not good for the fish in there. And so eventually the entire system breaks down and you end up with a stagnated pond and it's just a nasty mess. But if you understand what's happening from start to finish, you can resolve these issues so ridiculously simple with a plant that some people... you know, despise. It's a weed. It's invasive. It's obnoxious. It makes the pond look terrible. And so turning the positive into or negative into a positive is what I'm talking about with this particular plant. And the benefits of which, if you actually got this into the mainstream as far as sitting down with Congress and the Senate and companies and saying, look, you guys can still do what it is that you do, but if you do it this way, it'll be financially beneficial for you and environmentally beneficial for everyone downstream of you. And you could turn it into a plus. And it ain't going to cost them that much money in order to make a retaining pond while they're out building terraces that are guiding the water back and forth across the farmland. They could guide it into retaining ponds so that that runoff water would first go into a retaining pond where it could then start the filtration system. And then from that point on, with the screen around that retaining pond to only allow the water to escape from it, and in stages as it goes down until it finally leaves their property and goes on to somebody else's property and becomes their problem. But if it was done like I'm saying here, by the time it got to the other property, it would have absorbed enough of the nutrients out of that water that it would not overload the next water body in line. So that's a plus. And if they're using pesticides and stuff like that, well, then you got another issue to take in consideration as well. So pesticides, chemical pesticides like the ones that Thomas mentioned earlier, like 7-Dest or whatever, that's not obviously something you want to put in your mouth. And so you probably wouldn't want to feed it to your animals either. But you could turn that particular one, if you're using chemical fertilizers, into biodiesels, biofuels, but not using it for like a food grade source for wildlife or people. Now, if it was done on a more natural deal, to where maybe you're using, instead of using any regular chemical pesticides, using more natural pesticides or natural herbicides or whatever. You wouldn't want a herbicide in there, obviously. Hold on. Somebody trying to call in here. I'm going to try to add somebody to this call here, Thomas.
All right.
So, anyway, if it was done more naturally, you could have different grades of whether or not one would be a food grade, product, or, basically a fuel grade product. So, with a little bit of responsibility, you could actually turn this into a plus. So, let me see here. Alright, so I'm adding Ted to the call. If he picks up. Yeah. Let's see. So anyway, it's all in the infrastructure, or how you get people involved in actually wanting or even interested in trying to... Doggone it. The heck is going on here? I thought I added Ted, but apparently I did not. Huh. Try it again. So... it'd basically be getting in the local communities and lobbying, local leadership and stuff to be, interested in this concept. But you could get this resolved to where any wastewater wouldn't be somebody else's problem down the line, and clean up all the waterways. Let's see what else this lady got to say.
These ponds, how far are they away from the nearest road? Because remember, if you're successful and you've bagged 30 gallons of duckweed, are you going to have to walk 4 blocks dragging heavy buckets of duckweed back to your car? Try to find a pond within 25 to 50 feet of the nearest road. I've learned that the hard way, trust me. Okay, on FlashEarth.com, you will see a scene similar to this. If I'm going to... I don't know if I can do this. But I'm going to show you... There, on this particular scene, there are three duckweed ponds. It's a little small. If I could blow it up, I'm going to try here. Yeah, maybe not. But at any rate, if you look really hard, actually there are four. What you're looking for when you look down at the earth, maybe 1,000 feet, is you're going to want to see this bright color with a little bit of dusty haze to it. Some are a little brighter than this. This is the first pond that I have ever found duckweed in, and it was in my own backyard. I lived in this home for 21 years, and I would take my kids to play out here, go fishing and so on, and I never knew what that green plant was floating on the water surface. As it turns out, it was duckweed. And that's 5 years ago. That's when I really started bringing it back to the house, putting it in a kiddie pool, putting it in any kind of open container I could just to watch it grow. It's a very fascinating plant. Have you seen the others yet? All right. I'm going to slide over to the top left where you will see two rectangular wastewater treatment sewage lagoons. Those are loaded with duckweed as well. And also, the last area, at the very top of the screen, you will see three chicken barns. Off to the lower right is a small duckweed pond. Now, as you look for this coloration, see how close they are to the road. Look to see how close what kind of access you have. Are you going to have to crawl through a bunch of poison ivy? It's hard to tell from this angle. But believe me, I've found promising ponds here, there, and everywhere. But the logistics of getting to the shoreline of that pond require some fortitude, shall we say. Okay. Also, let's go back to this picture down to the lower right. This pond is very, very typical of a duckweed pond in that it is surrounded by trees and bushes. There was waste nutrient runoff from the manufacturing facility nearby. It was wind protected. That combination makes for a thriving, healthy duckweed. But while at the wastewater treatment lagoon in the top left, even though there is no wind protection from the northwest, and you can see where the wind blows to the southeast and creates a clear area, and then it just gets denser and denser and mats up as you go to the southeast. That there is just so many nutrients there. The duckweed might be dying as it hits that southern shore because it builds up and it smothers it. It just crowds itself out. But there are so many nutrients. It's thriving so rapidly there, growing so fast, that it can keep up with the hazards that it has to encounter as far as biomass volume. Okay. When you do go to Google Earth or...
Okay, she's just basically telling you how you can find it using the internet, that kind of stuff right there. But, nonetheless, if you use this stuff properly, it's like a unlimited resource. You can fertilize it yourself, and you can reuse last year's fertilizer, because the last year's fertilizer is what put it the nutrients it is right now, and it's unlimited potential. So, if they're looking for clean, sustainable, alternative energies, this is just one tiny example of what actually could be used if the industry would take note to it. I skipped ahead a little bit in this podcast. Let's see what else you got.
Log the pool scene, find out what the flora and fauna is, and if you're able to bring a pH meter, any kind of testing equipment. Ammonias are really good to test for, ammoniums, and so on. Also bring garbage bags or Ziploc bags if you're only going after a little bit of material. Well, the garbage bags are if you're going after huge amounts. And a nice cooler if you're worried that your samples are going to get over 92, 93 degrees Fahrenheit for very long, because you don't want them cooking by the time you get back home. Here's a picture of me sampling that very first pond I was telling you about. This is early in the spring. The leaves were just starting to pop out. And the primary species in that pond at that time of year is Wolfia. If you feel it between your fingers, it feels like it rolls around like little green ball bearings or cream of wheat grains. And as the season gets warmer, usually the Wolfia succeeds to the Lemna minor that's in that pond. Here's another pond. One thing you want to watch for is sticks in the water, because they will tear up a net if you're not careful. So what do you do with all the duckweed that you're going to bring home? The night before, I would suggest that you fill up some containers, keeping in mind how much you really truly want a bag. Fill up some containers with water, let the chlorine evaporate off overnight, unless you're lucky enough to have rainwater handy. Then for containers themselves, again, depending on how much you want of duckweed, try to make your containers large enough. It's better to be broad and shallow than narrow and deep. But if they're very, very shallow, for example, a glass pan, be careful that they don't evaporate, and be careful that it doesn't get too hot. Over 92, 93 degrees Fahrenheit is water temperature, your duckweed's going to stop growing regardless. So try to avoid galvanized containers if at all possible, and I'm not sure what the chemical reactions are, but I have crashed duckweed using an old galvanized horse watering trough.
Well, see, that's something I didn't know about.
Here's what fresh duckweed harvested looks like. This particular duckweed is a Lemna turrianifera, and the roots are about an inch and a half long, which means that it was doing pretty good, and then it slowed down. The nutrient load went down because the duckweed efficiently pulled all the nitrates and ammoniums out. But it was still, the roots were still short enough that next time we had a heavy rain, that duckweed would take off like a shot and do its doubling in biomass literally overnight. So don't forget, when you get your duckweed home and you get it in the water, try to keep it to where the duckweed is a single layer across the entire surface of the container. If it's too thick, you're going to have self-shading. If it's too thin, you're going to encourage sunlight to go into the lower parts of the water column, and algae will grow. You don't want that. Try this in the beginning, the first week. Try to go with semi-shade as your duckweed adjusts to its new area. Always go for wind protection whenever possible. Sometimes I would clump potted plants, big tall potted plants that I had, around my little duckweed ponds. Right now I've got test ponds growing that I have planted sunflowers all the way around the perimeter. Unfortunately, they're only 6 inches high right now, so I have to add on additional walls of netting to slow the wind down, because it will blow off to one side and it will dry out and kill off the under layers. So that's one of the downfalls with duckweed, but it's easily fixed. Predator protection. If you live on a farm and you want to try to go duckweed for your fish or your chickens or your ducks, keep them away from the duckweed while you're getting it established. That's all I can say. They will eat it up. Fertilizer requirements. First thing I do when I get duckweed into a new container is I go out and I get a shovel full of dirt and throw it in the water. The micronutrients from the dirt and the PK and N, no matter how low it is, that's enough to stabilize that water system and get your duckweed growing, slowly but growing. Then you're left with the choice of, do you want to go with an animal manure for fertilizer, or do you want to go with 2020, for example? If you go with 2020, I suggest you throw in a pinch of sea salt, unrefined if you can get it, depending on how much volume you have in your container. If you go with animal manure, try to go for something that's not aged too long. Put it in a bag and let it soak in the water like a tea bag. The best way to handle it is when you get your duckweed home, put it in 4 containers if you're going to go with the organic fertilizer. Put it in 4 containers. And
how you doing, Ted?
To each container.
How you doing, Shaziz?
Oh, pretty good. I guess I could stop that podcast there. She's basically telling folks all these links are in the Super Chat room over there at ShazizRadio.com. So if you want to look at in the duckweed, basically just go on YouTube and Google it up. Look at it. The more you learn about, the better. But either way, it is a renewable energy source. It's got benefits. They say it's had health benefits to it because if you turn it into like a powder, like they were talking about, it's got a lot of nutrients and stuff like that in there. And if you turn it into fish food flakes or fertilizers for your garden, or even for animals, rabbit food, or chicken food, or duck food, or whatever, it's amazing to me. Basically, it's water's filtration, nature's water filtration system. And it has a lot of benefits that, where, like I said earlier, what would have normally been something obnoxious, the farmer sending his doggone water off of his highly nutrient-rich fertilized field is throwing my pond out of balance, but it's the same process giving me an abundance of duckweed that could be used for multiple different sources, multiple different things. So, if they wanted to be completely sustainable from start to finish and reduce what they like to call fossil fuel, which, once again, you know how I feel about that. It doesn't matter. Nonetheless, it's still an amazing resource that nature has provided that would give you that sustainability and reduce the doggone pollution that goes downstream. When I say pollution, depends on what they're actually using out there. If they're using pesticides, chemical pesticides, bad ones, that's obviously not going to be a plus. It takes longer for that stuff to break down, like Thomas was saying. But if they're using natural fertilizers, natural pesticides, and stuff like that, everything from start to finish, by the time that water even gets off of their property, it's already been treated naturally, and it is ready to go downstream where it's not going to throw the next sign. It's like a domino effect whenever you get out there, you spray anhydrous ammonia and all these different types of fertilizers and spread cow manure or whatever out there. Now that ground is really nutrient rich, great for crops. But not all that nutrients gets absorbed up into the plants. Some of it, during rain, gets washed down to the next water body in line. And that's where the domino effect occurs. If you go out and you look around in the United States, and you're gonna notice it more frequently nowadays, when you look at bodies of water out there, they're either covered with lots of algae, or they're covered with duckweed or watermill. And in some places, they've actually been overtaken by water lily type plants and stuff like that. So that turns what would have normally been a really nice waterway fishing hole into basically a snag trap. You can't go fishing in these places because you'd be pulling in moss all the time. That's because there's not enough competing plant life in that pond because it's out of balance. But it can be resolved easy. So how you doing there, Ted? You got your mic muted.
I'm here, Shaziz. I'm here. I didn't want to interrupt there. Scooting the chair around. Oh. I'm doing really good, Shaziz. I've just been hanging out working on Mad Science myself, and I try to log on sometimes to listen to your show, and I can't get me or my sister's phone to listen to the stream.
Yeah.
And I'll try to figure it out, but I don't know what it is. That little radio thing doesn't seem to open up and start playing, and then even if I choose the web page, which was working for me a few weeks back, now it's not even working for me. So.
Well, go Google up Shaziz Radio, or jump over to People for People Radio Network and try their player. Okay.
People for People. All right, I'll go there next time.
Yeah.
I'll try.
So there's other places to listen in to.
Okay, cool.
But I don't know what the deal is.
It's okay. I know that fires you up when I tell you, but I just wanted to let you know that.
It might be something to do with whatever Adobe Flash player that you might have or whatever, you know, that kind of deal. But
how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Anyway, we're talking about green gold today, man.
Okay.
Green gold, duckweed.
Yeah.
You could even extend it to watermill or, you know, even algaes for that matter, because all of which can be utilized for different purposes, you know, one of which being biofuels that could be turned into, you know, like alcohol-based fuel supplements, or even turned into, you know, biodiesels and stuff. There's a lot of companies out there getting on board with actually doing it, but the biggest complaint that I've heard so far was the expense or whatever, you know, and I'm just not buying it, because you could build a gasification machine and, you know, gasify the doggone, you know, biological waste, whether it be grass clippings or, you know, that plant that Thomas was always talking about, kudzu, that it also could be used for other types of materials that you could make out of it. But tons of this stuff that normally, you know, wouldn't be as near as bad, but there's no competing plants in the ponds or the lakes or the waterways to keep up with it after a certain point. Because when the farmer's pushing his fertilizer out there on the ground, and whatever don't get absorbed up by the plant makes it down there, just throws that off balance. So whatever plant is in there at that given time is going to thrive. And if it just so happens to be duckweed or watermill, well, at a certain point, that stuff will get so thick on the pond that it'll block the sunlight out from underneath there, which will promote other things to grow that you don't want to grow. You know, and break down the ecological system, the ecosystem underneath the pond, if you understand what I'm saying. So, if this information was in the right hands, and people would actually implement it from start to finish, the farmer could benefit because he wouldn't have to pay for fertilizer. He wouldn't have to pay for fuel, or at least a lot less on fuel, depending on how much of this stuff that they were actually able to produce, because depending on how nutrient rich the water is will determine on how fast that this stuff actually grows. They said as little as 16 hours it'll double in size. That's a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so if you got a pig farm and that pig farm's polluting the water way down to the other end, causing it to do the same thing, if the person down at the other end wanted to turn that into a business, you should have heard some of the prices they mentioned earlier about what they were selling duckweed for. Everything from $6 a little baggie on eBay to $60 for really highly cleaned and perfect little samples in a petri dish.
Really?
Yeah, people were buying it to put in their fish tanks to feed their fish.
Oh, okay.
And they're using it to grow food to feed their rabbits and chickens and ducks and stuff. So, it's like green gold, man.
I got a friend up the road that's all about the duckweed, too. He's got it growing all over his place, he said.
Yeah?
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, you should go up there and take a look at it. It's amazing. Because where I'm trying to get rid of it so my pond will look decent, then I finally realized that I don't want to get rid of all of it because the fish like it, and you know they eat it real good. And so basically when the fish eats that food and then does its business in the water, it adds more nutrients to the water that feeds the duckweed again. So it's like a self-looping, self-contained system. You don't even have to feed your fish anymore. And if you did that in an aquaponic system where you was growing fish, plants, and everything, that gets a self-contained system. Mind-blowing. What do you think?
I love it. I love agriculture. It's one of my favorite things.
Well, it can be turned into people food, and they say there's like a different health benefits, like alternative medicines kind of stuff. That there's a lot of research out there available on it, and so you know it's definitely worth looking into. I'm just hoping to see that maybe it goes more mainstream. You know, it's not just duckweed though. You know, the duckweed's just one tiny fraction of what nature's already provided, that if you actually paid attention to why it is nature does what nature does, every single thing out there gets recycled into the system. And so, with that said, when we want to build some sort of biofuel to run generators to charge, to make electricity, then we can take in, from that point on, start developing equipment that runs more efficiently on the electricity that we're generating. And so you want to talk about getting efficiency. You're getting really good efficiency now. You're growing your own fuel. You're using that energy that you generate with the fuel in an incredibly efficient manner. If it's an internal combustion engine, you're using the heat off of that engine to do work. You're using the electricity that you're generating to do work. And it's a win-win situation all the way around. So, as far as I'm concerned, the whole looking for clean, renewable, alternative energy sources has already been solved. It's just sitting in the waiting room waiting for everybody to understand what mad science is trying to say here and take it and run with it. There are companies out there that are doing things with algae, making biodiesels. There are companies out there that are using duckweed in plastics manufacturing. You know, there are companies out there that know what it is that we're talking about. But if it's not a mainstream where the average Joe understands the power of what this one little tiny plant has capable of, there ain't no food shortage, that's for sure. It may not be the tastiest stuff on the planet, and you'll have to eat it in moderation because it does also have a lot of calcium in it. And too much calcium is obviously not a good thing, but it's just like everything else, whether it be sugar or anything else, you want to, your body's a chemistry set. You want to balance everything out. And if you balance everything out, then you got a good healthy body. If you got good fresh water and, you know, you're well hydrated and got all the chemistry perfect, you feel good. So it's a win-win. And so people are out there trying to say, oh, well, you know, we can't use corn because if we use corn to make ethanol, then that's going to make corn prices go up. So don't use corn. Use duckweed. Use watermill. Use algaes. Use things that would normally be obnoxious that are still biological that will break down and produce the same chemistry that you need. You know, starch for the alcohol portion. You know,
that's really requires sugar to make the alcohol. The plant material making the alcohol out of the starch, like you're saying.
Yeah. So, as far as I'm concerned, it's solved. It's just waiting for people to pick it up and run with it. You know, I wish that there was a way that I could get in front of environmental groups or anybody that has a larger platform and a voice that can get in the ears of the right people. These whole people out there in the Green Party, they've been hollering about save the planet for so many ridiculous years, and yet they're not even willing to entertain something that you're trying to show them like this. It just boggles my mind, because there ain't no problem out there that doesn't have a solution to it. You know, nature recycles everything, and once you understand the mechanics of what nature is doing and you mimic that, you can't run out of food. You can't run out of fresh water. You can't run out of crude oil. There's nothing on this planet that you could ever run out of. It doesn't matter what you do to it. You burn firewood, guess what? There's going to be more firewood, but all you did was change the chemical and the structural foundation of what that was at the one point in time. When you burn firewood, you make more chemicals that go back into the system and get recycled. You can't run out of nothing. You can't run out of water. You can't run out of crude oil. You can't run out of electricity. As long as this world continues to do what it has been doing since the dawn of time, every single thing on this planet, including us, gets recycled into the system. It's a self-contained biosphere of epic proportions, and if people learn how to utilize it properly, then you ain't got no war on oil. You ain't got no energy crisis. There's no reason to run around talking about clean, sustainable alternative, nothing. Because there ain't no starvation in the world if you utilize the resources properly. There ain't no overpopulation if you understand what nature has already accomplished. This planet can never, ever, ever get overpopulated. It's not physically possible. Nature balances everything out. If you had too many people on there, it'd be like too many fish in the pond. Too many fish in the pond means the oxygen levels drop down and something's got to give. And that's why you have massive fish die-offs. You have things out there like red algae that are natural that will basically, if the food source is low, it will release a toxin and it will kill off some fish, which then will turn into proteins that will feed the algae, and it's a survival mechanism for the algae, not to mention a balancing act for nature. So nature has already solved everything. And if you could get the mainstream mindset into how nature has been doing this all along, you'd stop hearing this ridiculousness about how the planet's overpopulated. There are people starving in the world for nothing. There's no reason for anyone to starve to death in this world when you got something like this that will take their dirty water, turn it into a food source and a fertilizer source, and be able to feed them people. And as far as the water situation out there, the people are saying, well, we're going to run out of fresh water to drink. Only if you're stupid, if you didn't pay attention in science class, and you've never heard a mad science show, then you might die of starvation or sickness or even thirst while standing next to an ocean that has all the remedies and everything necessary to resolve that issue so you're not starving. The ocean has food in it. It has salts in it. You need salts in your chemistry. You can take that water, you can desalinate it, you can turn it into fresh water, which you need the majority of in your body to survive. And the food, everything necessary to resolve it so you ain't dying of thirst standing next to miles and miles of ocean because you didn't pay attention in science class. And as ridiculous as it sounds, it might be the trash on the beach that saves your life, because you can use those materials such as plastic to make a crude desalination plant that will take the evaporation process and leave all the heavies and the salt behind while putting fresh water into the other side. Using temperature differences such as burying one half in the sand and using the heat of the sun on the opposite side to create a temperature difference so that the water will evaporate into a fine mist and then leave all the heavies behind and put the fresh on the other side. And that was using trash. So there ain't no reason for anyone to die of thirst. There ain't no reason for anyone to die of starvation. There definitely ain't no reason to go out there and fight over crude oil, because there is absolutely no way under the sun for us to ever run out of crude oil. It's not possible. Until this earth stops doing what it has been doing for since the dawn of time, all the same chemistry is there, all the same physics is there, all the same science is there, and it will continue to regenerate what they call fossil fuel over and over and over again. They shut down a whole lot of wells all over places like Texas, and because they drained them dry. Years later, they came back. The well's dry. Well, no, now the well's full again. How did that happen? All right? You drained it dry. How did it happen? What about all the natural gases in the world? You know, you got volcanoes all over the place. You got chemistry constantly being mixed up. You got methanes being created. You got CO2s being created. You've got every chemical that you could ever possibly imagine constantly being regenerated from waste such as grass clippings, trees falling down, trees rotting, tree leaves falling into the water. When that gets down there and it biodegrades, you get methanes produced, you get doggone CO2s produced. CO2s are sugars for plants and so on. Once you understand the mechanics of what nature has done, you have every single answer to every single question that you could possibly ask, and then some, on how to resolve every single problem under the sun. The only problem that I see right now that is a big problem that you can't seem to get realized is to get the people to pay attention and understand and work together. If you could get that accomplished, if you could get these people to realize what nature has already proven, you'd end us all, this whole process of people dying of starvation in what they like to classify third world countries. There ain't no reason for them to starve. Not when on this side of the deal you got basically an ecological disaster being perpetrated by somebody who is producing massive amounts of food in the farming industry, yet their byproduct of their farming is polluting my pond. And when I say pollution, I don't mean like literally toxifying it, but to put the water out of balance to where now the water is so incredibly highly nutrient rich, one species of plant life other than another will take over and dominate that waterway and start a domino effect down the way. But you come back at that pond years later when it finally balances itself back out, and that pond, nature will clean it up. And it starts with something as simple as that duckweed. It's pretty impressive. Now, where's the problem? Can you figure out any problem there, Ted?
Well, I mean, my mind was going to using the trash to save your life, and can I go with what was on my brain for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was thinking, you know, if you could find you a piece of old silverware, an old piece of silver, real like sterling silver silverware, and you got a battery around, you could make you a little silver water, and you would never have to worry about no infections. Because I've seen that silver water even here at the hospital around town. They use it for the MRSA wing because it'll even kick MRSA's butt.
Well, there's a lot of stuff out there that can beat MRSA. And you just don't get it in the medical industry for some reason, because I don't know for what reason they do what they're doing, but if they understood biology as much as they're supposed to, because they're doctors, you know, doctors and chemists and stuff like that, they should have already figured this thing out. Blows my doors off. But even your garden or your home food waste and all the food industry out there, if you want to grow something that is nutrient rich, imagine you start putting the food waste into a retaining pond and allow all that, when it's biodegrading, to add nutrients to that doggone deal and cause that stuff to grow like wildfire. So there ain't nothing, even in the food industry, that would ever get wasted. It's all regenerating itself. all the chemistry, man. Every single bit of it. You know, what you mentioned about the silver, there's a lot of research on that. Matter of fact, that's what they used to do that way, way back in the old days, by throwing a silver coin in some water barrels and stuff. So, you know, maybe it's rediscovery. Maybe that's what they need to do. Rediscover some of the things from the past, the natural medicines. All I'm trying to get a point across to everybody, you know, you make a huge biological disaster, ecological disaster, I think I'm talking about. Like, for example, when they busted that mine open and pumped all that crud down the doggone, that's going to take a long time for nature to clean up, you know? But if you understood that before it ever even got to the point, and you understood the chemistry and the mechanics of how nature would do all that, you could set the system up to resolve it before it ever even got into the waterways. Just think of all the doggone, like especially cities, they got huge water treatment plants. And these water treatment plants, they have to use like chemicals to try to get rid of some of the stuff. And some of the nightmare stories that you'll hear about what's actually in city water will blow your doors off. I mean, like, you know, vitamins that don't get those little vitamins that people take. They're not so little. They're kind of pretty good-sized vitamins. But they don't digest as well as they should. You should probably break them down into some sort of dust before you and drink it, as opposed to taking it in those compacted pill form, because that whole vitamin doesn't dissolve. It's not in your body long enough to dissolve, and it gets into the water. So you got all kinds of medicines and stuff inside the water filtration, water treatment facilities, and it'll really disgust you if you actually look into how city water is treated and then released and basically, you know, recycled.
Hey, I worked with a guy part-time that had his real job working at the water factory, and he was telling me that, you know, the city water is undrinkable, man. He said, don't drink that stuff. And yeah. He worked there, you know what I mean, where they do all that.
Well, then that's why people should look into different types of filtration. And as far as how nature actually does it, there's a lot of how-tos on out there how to make natural water filter systems. And
yeah, that's why I use a zero water filter, actually.
A what water filter?
Zero water filter.
Yeah.
Pick one up at Walmart if you don't know how to do any of the stuff you're talking about right now. They're like $12 for the filter and like $30 for the system. That $12 filter will last a household where you're actually watering your dog for a Rottweiler,
yeah.
Two cats, two people that are basically drinking everything that every bit of water they're drinking is coming from the filter, and every bit of water that you're using to make spaghetti or anything else where you're putting water into your food,
yeah,
for over 3 months.
Wow.
For $12. $12. Like, how much are you going to spend if you went down there and bought gallon jugs of bottled water, 88 cents for a refill or whatever, you know, or even 25 cents for a refill?
Oh, yeah, that if you're doing all that. Doors off how much money they make in the bottled water industry. When you talk, you just mentioned a filtration system, $12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's crazy.
And it's an expensive system. So, if you do some searching, you can probably find a more cost-efficient version, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the majority of what's being done in there is just activated carbon, though.
Well, that's why if people really looked into what it is that I'm talking about, there are, they make these really cool rain barrel filtration systems that basically does exactly what the Earth does. By the time that water gets down to the bottom, it is so crystal clear, it would blow your doors off, but it actually has... It has natural bacteria layers and all that down to carbon like you were talking about and other... It's like layers of the earth. It's how nature filters water before it gets down into the water table and into the waterways. So nature's already resolved it. And once you got that perfect balance, you could take and pull rainwater right off your roof, even though your roof has maybe composition shingles or something like that, none of that's going to make it through that filtration system. And then whatever does after that makes it through, the filtration system that you got would solve that problem, because I'm pretty sure it probably, down to the little micron pulls out all kinds of stuff. So,
well, considering there are tons of people that are drinking even the worst city water straight out of the tap, your final water filtration system is going to be your body, and it's pretty darn effective.
Yeah.
Considering you're just trying to lighten the load by using something else to do some of the filtration, so it's not wearing your body out.
That's the point right there. The less work your body has to do, the better.
That zero water filtration system I was talking about that I use is effective enough that when I fill the top up full of water, close the cap on it and let the water drain out of that, when you open it, it smells like the strength of the chlorine you smell at a city pool.
Wow.
Like a swimming pool. So it's actually filtering all the raw, like chlorine-based compounds out of it too, which is a gas. It's cleaning out the gas, a heavy gas at that, you know.
Well,
so it must be doing a pretty good job with anything that's an actual metal or any other toxic compound that's in there.
Well, let me ask you a question. When that filter is done, when it finally won't work anymore, does it still have that chlorine in it?
I don't know if there's any chlorine trapped in it. If it is, it's probably trapped as a salt. But the stuff that forms a gas, because it's unstable, that's coming out right into the air. It just blows away.
Well, I was just wondering, because if it did trap chlorine in there, you could use that doggone cap to throw into like a swimming pool to basically do what chlorine normally does. You see what I mean?
I would not use that. If you're going to have a pool, go with a salt pool. You're basically using the same technology to control things in it that you see in like the Dead Sea.
Did you say a salt pool?
Yeah. You use salt instead of using any of these other compounds that they try to sell you that are actually chemically unstable. So they're breaking down and, you know, acting on the anything that's in the water the way like hydrogen peroxide or sulfuric acid would act on something, or hydrochloric acid. The salt just makes an unlivable environment, so you don't have to worry about stuff growing in it.
Well, that makes sense. So,
that's cool.
Man.
Well, another advantage of that, too, is when you raise the salinity of the water to the level where you can be sure that you're not going to have anything growing in it that you could possibly get sick off of, whether it's, you know, coming from the environment or from somebody else's body.
Yeah.
You're actually increasing the density of the water to the point where it's a lot easier to float in it, so it becomes kind of a more enjoyable experience.
So it's easier to swim in because you're more buoyant.
Well, it will make you more buoyant.
Yeah.
Whether that's easier to swim in or not depends on what you're trying to do when you're swimming. If you're trying to dive and swim underwater, that might make it a little more difficult. But if you're trying to basically just float around and lounge around and enjoy yourself,
yeah,
it does. It makes it, you know, more much easier to do.
See, now, I don't understand why, you know, I think the education system's pretty much dropped the ball on a lot of this stuff, because if you took this stuff right here and you taught what we've been teaching here, talking about, you know, in schools and give people ideas on how to look at nature mechanically and chemically, like how nature actually does things, man, and you let their mind do the work that they're capable of doing, we wouldn't have, I keep on saying this, it drives me insane, because I know we should be so much further advanced right now than what we are, but because of the way that the money industry works, and business, and all that kind of stuff, you kind of want to drag your feet. It's like, you don't sell the iPhone 6 until you sold off all of the iPhone 5 kind of deal. So, you know, just like a
little. Right, and if you can engineer something to break down at a specific time so people have to come back and buy another one.
Yeah, planned obsolescence. Yeah, so that's the whole thing. So if the average Joe really wants a green, renewable, alternative, you know, solution to things, and a whole lot less trips to the doctor's office, then you'd think they'd really be wanting to hear this message. Seriously. I've listened to, I don't know how many people tell me how miserable their family has been. They got to go through chemotherapy, They got all these health problems, and you can track every single health problem back to a chemical imbalance of some sort, some form or fashion, because your body's a chemistry set. And if you ate healthy and you drink a lot of, you know, refreshed natural water, then your body will, you know, be able to heal itself better. And that would mean a whole lot less trips to the doggone doctor. And then when you get to the doctor, well, they throw a chemical concoction together that basically masks the symptoms and potentially causes you other problems in the process, because it too throws your balance out. And since everybody's chemistry is, there's no two people in the world that have the exact same chemistry because of body weight or whatever, then you have to understand how everything works and what would be the best per, like, let's say a 150-pound guy as opposed to a 250-pound guy, right? His chemistry is obviously going to be mathematically different than the little guy. It's still going to be the same chemistry. One of them might have too much iron, and one might have, too much of something else or not enough of something else. If you understood an average healthy person chemistry should be like that, you should be able to mathematically design the perfect meal for every single person, regardless of their size or weight, and the computer processing power necessary to do it, we've got. You got everything you need. All you need to know is, with the research of this is the chemistry in a perfectly healthy body. All right, and it has this much iron, it has this much salt, has this much water, has this much of everything. And so now you got a basis for what you can sit there and calculate up when you take somebody's blood or urine or whatever, and you can tell by the balance of different chemistry that's in there that it's off balance from, you got an iron deficiency. And you could literally sit there and specifically design the perfect meal for each and every individual on this planet. We got that capability. We have that technology available to us, and yet people are still going through chemotherapy, and they're not looking into different things like oxygen treatments and, you know, hyperbaric chambers and stuff like that. They're not looking into alternative medicines that would keep them out of the doctor's office. There's a reason why you get diseases. Now, there was a Dr. Lorraine Day wrote a book years ago called Diseases Don't Just Happen. Look it up. Read that book. And she explains it basically like I just did. Your body's a chemistry set. And when it's off balance, when it's lacking something, your body will actually crave salt when you're low on sodium. And so on down the line. So your body knows how to fix itself. It just has to have the right materials to do it. They have to be in balance.
Well, how do you explain my excessive craving for glazed donuts covered in white vanilla frosting?
Well, it could have something to do with that doggone sugar. Is your pancreas working fine?
Maybe it's not what you're talking about. Maybe it's the flavor itself. Well, because I remember what it tastes like.
It's addictive.
You know that people complain about addiction.
Yeah.
Where they'll look down on people who have a mental addiction to something, or they're addicted to something that's quote-unquote mentally addictive, but what they're not taking into consideration is that your body can't actively go, hey, I remember what that thing used to do, so I'm going to start acting up like heroin, where the body literally starts feeling sick and falling apart. And
yeah.
You really feel like garbage until your body eventually stops using, or I should say not using, the mechanisms that the heroin trained it to stop using, and starts using it again, which you're basically talking about a lot of the components that get sequestered whenever you get the flu.
Yeah.
Right? Which, when you have the flu, you're feeling everything your body normally feels that is hidden from you when you're healthy.
Yeah.
You have chemicals that are being released into your system to keep you feeling with at a state where you're not in pain. And those that chemistry is unbalanced when you have the flu, so that basically you're able to feel all of that pain.
Yeah.
Right? Well, when you take a drug that basically suppresses your pain receptors, your body stops making all the natural endorphins that are always flowing through your body in order to allow your body to function with all the pain that you normally go through just to do everyday things without actually, you know, over suppressing the pain receptors, so that if you're actually suffering something that could cause physical harm to your body and destroy it, you'll still feel that. So now if you stop taking that stuff, suddenly your body's not, you know, remembered, oh, hey, I need to start making those endorphins. Now you're in all this excruciating pain, you know?
Yeah.
But once your body triggers and goes back to feeling normal, you are just at the state you're supposed to be at. Your body doesn't ever go, hey, I remember how that felt. I want to do that again. A mental addiction, the memory of how it feels will linger forever as long as your memory is good. You would have to erase the memories to eliminate that mental addiction. So it's going to be the hardest addiction to ever beat. So anybody who tries to talk about people who are addicted to something that's quote-unquote mentally addictive as being weak because it's so much easier to kick because it's not like you're in pain.
Yep.
It's a load. It's a giant fat load. It's just shaming.
Well, I get
it. Stop doing it.
I get it. Yeah.
Amen.
So
you know, there's a lot to factor in. If it tastes good, you're not going to want to. Like there's one potato chip commercial says they can't eat just one.
Yeah. Well, and shaming somebody is just one of the triggers that could possibly cause them to go back into relapse. You know, like
yeah.
People who eat to cope. You know, so if you abuse somebody verbally who has an addiction, you're actually pushing them back into their addiction instead of being supportive and you know, being willing to listen to them when they got something to talk about and whatnot, and keep their mind off of things like that and onto something that's healthy, so that way they replace the addiction to a drug, say, or an unhealthy food with an addiction to accomplishment, getting somewhere, doing something.
Yeah.
You know, making their life better, you know, the daily grind of life and succeeding, winning at it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So. But even to that extent, we could still solve those problems if we could get communications open. That's the whole deal. I'd love to talk to some senators and some congressmen and some doggone people from environmentalist groups. They want a resolution. They at least they say they do. I mean, and that's all I'm saying. Okay. Well, my mind sees how things work mechanically, and there's other people out there that see how it works chemically, and they can explain it and articulate it way necessary that everybody should be able to understand what it is we're saying. If you mimic what nature has done, nature shows you how to filter water. Nature shows you about energy. There's nothing in this world that we could ever run out of. It's not possible. Until you take something off of this planet to wherever and completely remove something out of the equation, and there ain't no more of that chemical around, there's not no way you're going to run out of it. Because if you burn firewood, you just made more chemicals. You changed the structural makeup of that material into something else, the other products that then in turn will be recycled into the system and eventually become a new tree somewhere, you know, or a fish or whatever. It's all still here. Everything's still here. You know, we make some stuff that lasts a long time that are probably not good to be around. But if you understood the mechanics of nature and what I just explained, even those can be resolved. So that's what I've been trying to talk about. And if I get in front of the right doggone people and actually have them listen and implement some of the research that we've all been talking about for a long time, there ain't no problem we can't solve. The biggest problem is getting past an ego or getting past the person that is greedy and wants to make millions of dollars on what they call fossil fuels, when in reality there ain't no scarcity. There ain't never been a scarcity. That we live in a carbon-based world that supposedly, according to what science says, 3/4 covered in water, this earth. That's a lot of water. And then I had somebody tell me how stupid I was. Well, that's fresh water, stupid. I said, what? You never heard of Dubai? They got huge desalination plants. They got more water. Their population is pretty doggone big. They not only built the land that they're standing on, but they built the skyscrapers, huge desalination plants for heating, air conditioning, showering, food, and everything. They did it. So they can do it there. And they live pretty nice over there. They've got some, if you want to see some of the supercars, go look up some videos in Dubai where some of the really wealthy people live and blow your doors off.
Or you'll be out in the middle of the desert on your way into one of those major cities and see like a gold-plated Lamborghini go flying by.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're down to the end of it. I hope you enjoyed today's Mad Science Show. Green gold, it really is something that exists. And if people start a green gold rush, then maybe we can get their clean, renewable alternatives, sustainable, and all their words that they like to put out there as feel-good things. But, you know, hey, I'm waiting for results. That's what I want to see. You know, talk is cheap.
When are you going to do a more space-related episode?
When do you want to do a more space-related episode?
Let's plan one out for next weekend, man.
Okay, we can see
talk
what we
about
can do.
Everything from mining the sun to stellasers and warp drives and the whole nine yards.
Cool. I got some content on that. All right, folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned after the Mad Science for the Music with Kara Hour. If I could find that first song that she wanted on there. Okay. I'll have to remember which one she said. But either way, it's an hour of tunes with Kara. There it is. That's the one I believe she said she wanted. All right. So if you like this podcast, share it with somebody, especially if you find somebody who's in an environmental group and they care about saving the planet. I ain't heard them come here yet. I keep throwing down the gauntlet. I say, I want your scientists. I want your Green Party. I want all you people out there that's got complaints about what's going on out there, so we can sit down and talk about solutions and the research available. Stephen Gibbons posted a whole lot of links on the resource page. There's a button up there. If you click on that, if you're interested in alternative energy research, it's Stephen's resource page. Tons of information, tons of links to all kinds of stuff. That's what we do. We pass links here, we pass information. There's tons of podcasts. Share the podcast, bring people to the table. Let's get it done, because I'm getting impatient, man. I want to get some results. I want to see people start to do what I know is possible and fix this world that we live in, so that there ain't no reason to go out there and kill one another over food or resources that are so abundant that you ain't never going to run out of anything. If you think there's somebody
that
out there...
That would be definitely a good one to talk about, the stellar lifting, the solar lifting.
Yeah.
Where most of the resources that are in our solar system, we're talking like over 90% of the resources, all the matter that's in our solar system, are in the sun.
Well, there you go.
And it's under such incredibly high energy state that something as simple as one of these nuclear bombs we keep threatening each other with would literally lift millions of pounds of rare minerals and whatnot out far enough from the sun that we could scoop it up and snatch it away.
Cool.
And by doing this, it lowers the density of the sun so that it actually burns less energy and it traps less energy so that it runs more efficiently. You get the same amount of energy, essentially, and the sun will actually last longer.
How cool
would it be? More time to finally figure out what we're doing wrong.
Yeah, how cool would it be if nations got together instead of threatening, like you say, threatening with that technology and using it for peace and love? It'd be awesome.
Right. Totally. Well, the thing is, there's enough material in the sun, you could literally build a shell around the Earth, around the sun, like almost 8 or 9 times over at that habitable zone, that you live on the inside of the shell. How much land area do you need for the amount of people you have, you know?
Well, where there is a will, there is definitely a way, and that would basically turn us into masters of the universe, so to speak. We could, man, I just say you're only limited by your imagination. That's why Mad Science shows around, because I see all these potentials, and I know I've seen tons and tons of research. I've seen lots of brilliant people, and if you could just put this dream team together, you'd get it done. We should be so much further along. Anyway, you've been listening to Mad Science. Peace and love. Share the podcast. Share the links. Take care, everybody.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.